Three, two, one. And we're live? We're live. What's up, brother?
What's up?
Dude, how are you?
Very good.
We got you in here finally, man. How many times do we have to talk about this? Several, right?
A lot. This was the universe wanted it right
the
now.
The universe made it happen after the Till victory. That was for a lot of people, a big coming out party for you.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought I was.
Yeah, you were already out. But that was like, holy shit. The way you put him out, that was a holy shit moment.
I was going for that moment. That's what I was trying to do.
Yeah.
I knew a decision wasn't going to come my way that way, you know. Not to say nothing about the English, but I don't like the judging over there. I've seen a lot of decisions go like super crooked, you know.
I don't like decisions in almost every state.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's decisions in almost every athletic commission that you just shake your head at and you don't understand.
What's the worst one you can think of?
I don't know. I don't know. I'd have to sit back and go over the archives. But I've seen some horrible ones.
Yeah.
Even ones where guys win, they like barely win. You're like, how the fuck was that close?
Like 29,
yeah, that kind of shit. And you're like, what 30, round? Yeah, there's a lot of those.
It's getting better, though, because more fighters every day are joining that force. You know, I hear about fighters that used to fight that are involved in the commissions, at least like in Florida and stuff. So I know 10 years from now, there's going to be nothing but productive people in there, people that know what they're looking at, you know?
We can only hope. I mean, that's the number one problem. I think the scoring system sucks, too. Like, adopting the 10-9, even the new improved scoring system, it's like, MMA is so much different than boxing, and to adopt this scoring system just because it already existed for boxing, you know, that's like adopting the rules of tennis for ping pong. Like,
yeah,
they're different things.
It's a mafia.
Is that what it is?
The boxing thing?
Yeah.
Why is a boxing commission governing the MMA commission? Shouldn't we have our own thing? You know?
I think in some places they just didn't have the infrastructure, you know?
Nowadays we could do it.
Nowadays, for sure. Yeah, in most places. But yeah, times are changing. I mean, you've been around for a long time, my friend. I remember the first time I ever saw you fight. It was a backyard bare knuckle fight in the Kimbo Slice days. That was the first time I heard about you. And then I saw you fight Eve Edwards in Bodog.
Yeah.
Remember Bodog fight? Yeah.
It was the golden ages.
The golden ages, man.
That was a while ago.
Damn, it's crazy. Like, Bodog fight was a fun organization. Cain Velasquez fought there.
Yeah.
Chael Sonnen fought there.
Yeah. Eddie Alvarez.
That's right. Yeah. Fedor. Fedor had a fight over there.
Brad Pickett as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike Brown.
Yeah. What happened with them? They went under because of the whole gambling rules online changed, right?
Not from what I heard. From what I heard was the spending budget. This is what I heard. Calvin Ayer, there was the owner of Bodog, right? He put up this huge budget. And these are just rumors from what I heard from the people working, you know. But it was like $100 million for XYZ amount of years to get them publicity so people would see the fights and then go to the casino. And that $100 million got blown out like in 2-3 years is what I heard.
Oh.
And I wouldn't disagree because they used to pay me really good and give us super perks. They used to give us some super perks, you know. Take us to exotic locations to fight, be there for 2 weeks. You plus two, they'd fly out, take care of you. They really, really took very good care of you. So when I heard that they blew out $100 million in 3 years, I was like, yeah, it could be, you know.
Well, they were fighting on the beach with hot girls in bikinis, wandering around dancing.
Yeah.
But you were on the beach, like in the sun. I was like, who the fucking idea is it to fight in the sun?
But let me tell you, the training sessions that went on there were some of the best that I've seen in the world because so you would go and you'd bring two of your corner men, and then somebody found that, and then before you know it, you had like four people of your entourage going with you from whatever team that was, and everybody was doing that, and we'd have a training place, and what they had done was laid out tarps and mats, and it was huge. So we'd have like 100 pros, 50 pros from all over the world just training, you know. And when you don't know each other and it's like, hey, you want to roll, you know, it gets competitive, you know.
Yeah.
So there was some great training sessions that I saw and that I took a part of, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, it was fun, man. Good fucking time.
Look, the world needs more of those. They need more ONE FCs. We need more Bellators. We need more, you know.
Competition.
Whatever the Professional Fight League is called now. What do they call themselves now?
Professional Fighters League.
Is that what it is? It's PFL. It used to be World Series of Fighting. That's right. Yeah, we need more. We need more of them.
Oh, so PFL is World Series of Fighting.
It used to be World Series. Now it's PFL.
Okay.
Yeah, I think pretty sure most of the same organization.
Okay.
Yeah. We need more. You know,
I need more money.
Yeah, that Oscar De La Hoya thing. You know, that's probably never going to happen again after the Tito and Chuck fight. It doesn't look like but someone of that ilk, someone like a Golden Boy Promotions, they started getting involved in MMA and putting together, they could get some guys that aren't signed but are super high level with a big name. Like maybe the contract comes up and they decide to do something with a big name promoter. You know, it'd be good for everybody.
Hey, Golden Boy tried many years ago, didn't they? With Affliction was an Oscar part of that. I remember Oscar, Donald Trump.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
Donald Trump was a part of Affliction. That's right. Josh Barnett sunk that ship. Josh Barnett tested positive, and that ship sunk.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah,
yeah. And then the UFC bought it like right afterwards.
Yeah.
They had some fun fights, though. That fucking Tim Sylvia Fedor fight was wild as shit.
Andre Arlovski.
Yeah, Arlovski, Fedor. Look at Donald Trump and Fedor. With Tom Atencio. That's hilarious. Yeah, back in the day, son. Yeah, Donald Trump and Tim Sylvia. That's hilarious. He was a totally different character back then. Donald Trump was like a fun guy. Like, everybody liked him. You want to be like Donald Trump. He was always at the
boxing fights,
too. Yeah, people liked him. He'd get cheered on. Yeah. Now people are so fucking mad at him. Same guy.
Nah, they don't see him that way no more.
No, they don't. They don't, man.
That's why he has all security around him now.
Oh, yeah, he has to. Yeah, he fucked up. Became president.
Yeah.
It's a huge mistake for anybody. You want to enjoy your life? Don't be fucking president.
He could disappear, get facial surgery or something. You think so? Of course. Plus, you get that booklet with all the secrets of the history.
Oh,
just for that alone.
The CFR book.
Just for that
alone. Who do you think gives you that book? Is it the CIA, the NSA? Or who comes to you with the book?
Some guy with no face, nothing.
No face. Yeah, like the guy with the blotter. Away. And the mask. What is the watchman? Yeah. Who is that guy? Ink blot? What's his name?
Rorschach.
Yeah. That's right. That guy. Yeah, he comes to you. He comes to you with the book.
Gotta be
what do you think's in that book?
We all know what's in that book.
Tell me. I don't know what's in that book.
You don't know what's in that book?
What's in the book?
You think I'm going to say here and what, millions of people are listening to get killed? I can't say.
Oh.
I've seen the book, but I can't talk
about it. What do you
think's
in the
book? No,
I'm joking. No. What do you think, if you had a guess?
Like,
let's say President Jorge, your first day in office. Mr. Masvidal, what would you like to go over first?
Is Elvis still alive?
What about Tupac? Where the fuck are you keeping him?
Where's Tupac at?
Who else?
What's going on with these aliens, bro? Are they real? What's
really
happening?
That's my number one.
Number one?
Number one I want to know about aliens. I was hoping. This is my hope. When all these people are screaming in the streets about Trump, like, no! I was hoping the moment he gets in, he's going to ask about aliens. Because Trump's into conspiracies. Like, he used to go on the Alex Jones show all the time. I know he's into conspiracies. If you were going to be the president, the first thing you'd ask is fucking aliens. What do you got?
See what's going on here with these green fellas.
Yeah. What do you think is going on with them?
I don't know.
You live in Florida. There's plenty of aliens down there.
No, we don't got... Oh, yeah. We got a lot of aliens, different types of aliens.
Florida's
we're talking about those
trip.
Aliens?
No. Yeah, Florida's a trip. It's one of my favorite places because it literally, like, especially the whole southern Florida area, like Miami, you know, West Palm down. It seems like you should have a passport to go there. It's just, it's so different than the rest of America. It's
don't
wild.
Speak English.
It's great. The food is all exotic. It's like it's such a different flavor, and then the weather's crazy. It's almost like going to another country.
Yeah, you need a little pass. You go to the gas station trying to put gas. Like, what language are you speaking? Nobody speaks English there. People get upset. I'm always at a gas station, and then somebody like an American person will be in the line and fucking damn it, man! Nobody speaks English here, and then I have to like translate. Oh, calm down, man. It's okay, bro. You know, there's people speak English and Spanish. You know,
It's also the weather there. It's so, when it gets crazy, it gets so crazy. I went with Eddie Bravo once, and he was doing a jiu-jitsu seminar. We had a drive from West Palm down to Miami, and as we're driving, this storm hit. It was so hard, everyone stopped dead on the highway because you couldn't drive, because you couldn't see in front of you. We were laughing. No one could see anything. It was just all a wall of water that was pounding down on the car for about 10 minutes, and then it all went away. We were like, what in the fuck was that? You can't see in front of you. Didn't matter if you had windshield wipers on. You were going nowhere. You couldn't drive. You couldn't see.
Sounds about right.
That's about right, right?
That's why Miami people, Florida people got that spastic behavior as well, just like the weather, you know. We're here one moment, we're gone the next, you know.
It's all temporary.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, you being down there, though, you couldn't ask for a better training environment. I mean, what they've established down there. I mean, it was great when there was the Black Zillions there as well, but, I mean, American top team down there, like, holy shit.
we are in Florida. I mean, Black Zillions was trying to do that cute thing to saying that they were giving us competition. I don't. Whatever happened to that team?
Well, the guy died.
No, but before that, it was long extinct.
Yeah. Well, it's look, Dan Lambert's a bad motherfucker. It costs a lot of money to do what he did. And that guy is he's one of the treasures of the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and what he did was not just do it once, but then build a whole new place.
Yeah.
The giant new place with dormitories and shit, state-of-the-art facility.
Dan loves it, man. Dan.
He's amazing.
Have you ever been to Dan's house?
No, never have.
Well, he's probably going to get mad at me. I'm going to put him on blast right now, but fuck it. Let's pick at him real quick. He's rich, so, you know, he's got a really nice house to start with. And you go inside the house and you don't see any pictures of his kids, which he has a beautiful family. But you do see pictures, massive pictures. I'm talking about, they won't fit in this room. They're huge pictures of his fighters knocking people out and submitting people all over his living room, man. And he'll tell you, he goes, wow. Man, the gym is my baby. I would, no way I'd get rid of this. You know, this is his, that's his thing. That's his baby, man. He loves it, man.
Yeah.
And Dan's also a tough motherfucker, bro. I've rolled with him. Back in the day when he was maybe like 8 years ago, he used to roll with everybody. If you were a world champion or not, I'd be like, let's roll. Just straight jiu-jitsu, and he's fucking pretty good, man.
Yeah, he's very good. He's legit. Yeah, he's a great guy, too. And you know, I remember when that place was basically just a money hole for him. He just kept pumping money into it. He was funding fighters. Some of them took advantage of him.
A lot of them
took advantage of him. But he stuck with it.
Yeah.
And then he started developing world champions. Yeah. And now it's like, wow, look at that place.
100%.
I mean, when you talk about best gyms on the planet, you always have to mention ATT. You have to.
Obviously, my opinion is biased, but I think we stand alone in the world. I don't think nobody's, just sheer numbers, you know, we just got another title holder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on my card, we got four people from American Top Team fighting against the world, you know. I think for a while it was like Greg Jackson's and AKA, they were producing a lot of people, but as of late, the last like 4 years, I think it's American Top Team.
Yeah, it's also the incredible diversity of talent that you could train with.
Yeah.
You know, there's so
many. That's what attracts it. You know,
You're
a 135er, and back home you're the only 135er, and maybe you're a world class guy. You come in here, you got like five 135ers, and three of them might be in the top 10 in the UFC. You know?
What do you attribute your longevity to and your enthusiasm to? Because you've always been a guy who loves fighting, you've always been a guy who, I mean, you've had that enthusiasm for a long time, man.
You know, not a lot of things can capture my attention. You know, like I can't just watch TV, for example, you know, like a football game and sit through the whole thing. You know, not trying to diss football or anything. I just don't have that attention span, or basketball or baseball. Fighting can just, like, I'm talking to you and the fight goes on and I'm just like almost get zoned out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always had my attention since a kid, since before I knew that I could make money off of it. It just attracted me, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's that primal instinct, survival, whatever it is, it's just hardwired deep into me, you know. And my longevity, one thing I definitely attribute to is not taking steroids, man. You know, just being natural, enjoying this ride, the natural form, you know.
Yeah.
Not like pushing my body towards limits that I'm bench pressing 400 pounds but my ligaments are weak, things like that, you know. And I also think God made me for this, you know. The way that I've been fighting my whole career, you know, I have really good defense. The last fight it didn't show, but I'm also like built hard, man. I walked out of the till fight without a bruise.
I mean, look,
you
got clipped with one left hand in the initial after you dick kicked him, which is crazy. He came out. That was the first fight I ever saw with an opening flying sidekick dick kick.
Liu Kang to the balls.
Sorry. But then he clipped you with, it was a perfect straight left,
perfect.
But you survived on the ground. You survived on the ground. You covered up. You showed great defense on the ground. You got back to your feet and you kept it together. You know, and the combination that you hit him with, you'd hit him with that combination a couple times. Is that something you prepared for, that when you were switching and then throwing that left hand? Did you prepare
when
for
I
it
went
that way?
Southpaw and then pat.
Yeah.
Me and my coach, he's the one that'll do like all the technique. The guy that I've been with forever, Paulino Hernandez, I think the greatest striking coach ever. He showed me like, hey, let's do this, you know. And I'm like, oh man, I don't want to do any new techniques. Come on, let's just do it, you know. And then we started doing it. And this was like a while ago. And then for this fight, and I had stopped doing it, you know, because a lot of techniques, we work them a lot. When he brings me a technique to the table, we're going to rep it out 1,000 times in a week. And the next week, the same thing. Talit feels that I got it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it'll be like, all right, cool. It's there in the tool shed. When we need it, we'll polish it up. So for this fight, he's like, hey, remember that technique? Let's bring it. I think it'll work here. I go, man, but he's a southpaw. He's like, I'm telling you, the way he's moving, the way he's, you know, fighting with you, it's going to work.
Mm.
So we started doing it, and boom, money.
You caught him with it a couple times before you put him away with it, right?
Not with that one, with that same exact one. Similar ones. But I didn't go full southpaw to the blitz. You know, I did it other different ways, you know? And I also caught him a lot with, like, overhand and left hook as he was coming in, especially in the second round. I caught him, I think, maybe twice with that combo.
Yeah, man, that's a big knockout. That was a big knockout. He's an interesting guy because he's really too big for 170.
Yeah.
He's so fucking tall. But you are a guy who doesn't cut much weight at all. Like, how much weight do you cut?
By the time I get into shape, I'm around 182 pounds, 180 pounds. So fight week, I get over there and I'm like 8 pounds away, seven pounds away. You know,
that's so light.
Yeah,
it's nice.
I don't cut anything. At 55, if everything went right when I used to fight at 155, I got there at 174 pounds, 173 pounds, 5% body fat, and the rest is just water, man. It would fucking kill me. So I always felt I was too big for 55. You know, I loved it because the competition was stiffer, but it was just getting harder and harder. Once they took those IVs away, forget it. There was no way for me to make that weight.
Yeah, and moving up has been very successful for you. I mean, you look better moving up than I think you have ever in your career.
I don't think I had any stoppages at 55 with the hands, like ending somebody. I dropped numerous people, but I never KO'd somebody stiff, you know. And at 70, I got a couple of them.
Do you attribute that to having more power at 70? Like
more
being
energy,
healthier, feeling
energy,
better?
Energy, confident, you know. Once you run that desert to cut the weight and then you still have to fist fight, that's still in the back of your mind. Like, you know, do I have 50 good hot right hands in me, you know?
Right.
And those doubts and stuff come in you. And also, your insides take a beating when you cut that weight. When you're cutting like 12 pounds and up of water, your insides take a beating. So you get hit in the stomach and like, whoa, that shit fucking hurt. It doesn't hurt like this in practice, you know? So it sucks, man. It sucks. Harsh water cuts suck.
We were talking about it outside that I think that if they instituted hydration tests and more weight classes and just
more
cut it
classes.
Out. Just cut out weight cutting altogether. Cut it out, man. Just figure out a way to eliminate. Make people fight at what they weigh at. But you got to have more weight classes.
No, definitely.
You have to.
I mean, most of the population walks around between like 145 and 170, I think, right? You know, most of my friends are not heavyweights or very short dudes. You know, they're like right around this. So I think definitely in those weight classes, they could definitely add more, you know. Maybe even 7 pounds in those weight classes, every 7 pounds a difference. And then as they get bigger, they could do like 10 pounds, you know, like 85, 95, 205, you know.
I don't think it's – some people said that boxing is too watered down. I think what waters down boxing is the different organizations.
Yes.
I don't think it's weight classes.
15 belts per weight class. Come on, man.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with a 147 and a 154.
No.
That doesn't bother me.
No way.
I mean, that 7 pounds.
147, 154, 160, and they have 168. I think that's perfect.
Perfect.
You know?
Yeah. I always thought it was weird that we didn't adopt, if we're going to adopt the boxing 10-point must system, why don't we adopt the weight classes? Like,
that's
why do we have our own?
It's the weirdest.
How is lightweight 155? Lightweight's always been 135.
Yeah,
we all know
exactly,
that. Welterweight's 147. It's not 170. How is that welterweight? Like, that's ridiculous. There was already a welterweight. Like, it's like calling a pound, like, oh, well, this is our pound in South Dakota. It's 7 pounds.
It's a little heavier in South Dakota.
Yeah, like, what is that? You know what I mean? Yeah. It would be better for the athletes. But I get the UFC's idea that they don't want to have like all these titles. They don't want to have like 12 different titles. They don't want it to be watered down. But
well, it's starting to be. We got a bunch of interim champions right now, don't we?
Yeah. Well, listen, those two that we had this past weekend, I don't see how anybody could argue with those.
No, those are great fights.
Those are amazing.
Wow. And I've been training alongside the DP for a while, so this is... Like everybody knows who DP is already, but this, I think, puts him in like a special category.
For sure.
To beat a guy like Max, man.
And to beat him the way he beat him, to stun him bad in that first round, and then just every time he connected, he was rocking him. I mean, he really showed his power, showed the difference between a 55er and a 45er. And showed
DP
how
can crack. I've been working with him for a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen him lay out dudes stiff in the gym a lot. You know, he's got one of the higher body counts for laying dudes out stiff at ATT. Not even joking.
I believe it.
Yeah.
He's got power.
Another guy that would lay dudes stiff on the constant was Hector, man. Those guys got body counts for the gym. Yeah.
Lombard?
Yeah.
I can imagine he kind of spars hard.
Yeah, he spars a little hard.
He's a wild man. He's also a freak athlete, too.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when Hector was laying people out in Bellator before he came over to the UFC. I mean, I think he fought his prime fights over there, really. That was at 85, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 70 was a harsh cut for him.
Brutal cut. Yeah. He's so thick.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? Those fucking Cuban genetics, man. Yeah, that's what he looks like. Thickness.
Yeah. Joel, too, is another
yes.
guy.
Yes.
Got all neck.
You know? Joel is ridiculous.
42 whenever years old can lay out with any
you're
hand.
Like, I can't even believe this is a real human. Whenever he weighs in, I'm like, what the fuck is this? He's such a specimen. You know what I mean?
Scary dude, bro. I've been training along that guy too long, bro. He does. He's one of the freakier athletes.
Oh, yeah. Bro.
Him, Lombard, and to me, one of the best athletes I've ever seen that I've been around with. Not too many people know him, but he's a wild man, like the wildest of the bunch. He's the one that when he comes in the mat, in the room, me, Joel, Hector, whoever's there that knows him, takes off the hat and goes, the guy's here. The man is here. Is Alexis Villa, bro. That guy's a freak athlete, bro.
Yeah?
Two-time world champion wrestler, Olympic bronze medalist. But, man, that guy could play any sport, man. Like handball.
How long has he been over at ATT?
No. He's beating a sentence right now. He's doing a little bit of jail time for a crime that he didn't commit. But he was fighting. He fought in Bellator. He beat Joe Warren. He knocked him out.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. Okay.
Alexis Villa.
Mm.
And, man, he from pure athleticism, this guy would do crazy stuff, you know?
Yeah.
He played basketball with, like, a basketball high school team just by, like, what the fuck?
What weight is he competing at?
He was at 125 and 135. Freak athlete, though. Yeah. He'd do some crazy stuff. Yeah, bro. Freak athlete, man.
Yeah, there's some freak athletes in the sport now. It's interesting to see the difference between the athletes from, like, 93, you know, in the first UFCs to now. It's a crazy difference. I still don't think that we get the same caliber of athletes as the NFL or the NHL or rather NBA.
Well, in different ways, yeah.
It's
in different ways because we get the best and fastest guys from like 170 and down. Like those 45, 35 pounders, they're growing up either wrestling or boxing or doing some of that nature. They know they're not going to play basketball or football.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, we do have some pretty freaky lighter weight athletes.
Yeah.
How old are you now?
Judo.
How old are you now?
34.
How many more years do you feel you're going to be doing this?
Comfortably, I'm going to fight till I'm 38 at least. More years. And then if the money is right, I'll stick around. You know, but at 38, I've lived this roller coaster long enough. It's time to stop. Just dedicate full time to my kids.
Did you start fighting like
20? 18. Pro.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Had a couple amateur fights, went pro, and enjoyed this roller coaster. It's my favorite roller coaster.
What kind of training did you have before you went pro?
Just that fucking somebody that had like maybe one or two pro fights in MMA, like advising you, like, hey, I think you should be doing this, man. Why don't we go chop trees and shit? All right, let's go do it, you know?
Did you have any fight training?
Yeah, I had fight training, but it wasn't like structured, you know? Mm-hmm.
Your first original martial art?
Like as a kid, my dad had sucked me like in anything, you know, like martial arts, because I was a very, hyperactive individual, you know? So my dad is like, man, I got to stick this guy in something, you know? So they had me, like, in karate. What else I done? Maybe some taekwondo, but I didn't get, like, far in a lot of these things because I'd start to excel in the programs, obviously, because of my natural aggressiveness. But then in school, if I get in trouble with the grades or anything, my mom would be like, no, we got to take him out. It's only going to further the damage. We're not going to let him go there and be at peace. We're going to take him out. Every time he messes up at school. So I'd start doing good at a gym like 2-3 months and then get taken out, you know? So that was like a recurring thing till I got to like 14 years old. And I was like, that's it, man. I need to be in the gym all day long. It's the only way to do it.
So when did you, have you had parts in your career where you took it more seriously?
Oh, well, as a kid until I got to like 13, 14, I wasn't able to, like, mom, I'm not going to school today. I'm going to the gym now, you know? But right around I got 14, I knew already more or less what I want to do. I had already seen the UFC enough. And before the UFC came out, I was like, I'm either going to box or I'm going to wrestle. Those two things are amazing and the coolest things I've ever seen. And then UFC comes out and blows my fucking mind. I was like, what the fuck is this, bro? You're getting paid for this? And then I was hearing what they were getting paid at the time. I was like, man, I could make a living off this. I'm doing this. Fuck that, you know? And I invested everything I had ever since, you know, into this.
Wow. So, well, you keep saying the resurrection is a big thing that you're putting on, like, social media. The resurrection. What is that about?
Numerous things, you know. More on the personal side. Just cutting off a lot of bullshit out of my life. Like, tremendous amounts of it, you know. And focusing on what I got to do, you know. I've done a lot of stupid shit in my career, you know. just from being, from having genetics and being blessed and like, man, I could party all night long and then park the car at the gym at 6 a.m. in the morning. I'll wake up at 10 a.m. and then kick everybody's ass in the workout room. And I'm not talking shit because anybody that works out with me will tell you every day that I'm in there, I'm a nightmare, you know? And then I go home and sleep a couple hours and then go back to the gym at night and do stupid shit like that. You know, I did that for a while. And I've, not that I was currently doing that, but I did that a lot. You know,
didn't
I
give abused chance, my body. Your body a chance to really recover.
You know, from that and like a million other dumb things. So I've just focused on just fighting, man. Just doing this 100%. And
you even cut out social media.
Yeah, that I've cut out a long time ago. But even more now, you know. It's, for me, I'm not good with technology to start with. I'm not the greatest with the technology gizmo and stuff, man.
Right.
You know, you got the Elon Musks of this world, and you got me on the other spectrum, man. I just want to fight. I just want to do athletic things, sports. You know, call me up if you're going to go for a fucking five-hour hike. But if I got to send emails and shit, I'm fucked. So now we're talking about social media. I don't know how many even followers I got in there. It's a lot of pressure to keep up with this stuff, you know?
Right, so you just ignore it now. I can do this, the
talking, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't ignore it. I get on it. My manager stays on top of me, and he helps me out tremendously. But I was in the special classes in elementary, you know. I had the short bus, two teachers in my class, eight students, you know. So you can't force me on this social media stuff, you know. Feels like I'm back in school.
But you obviously are a smart dude. You're a smart dude. I can tell that from talking to you. And you're clearly smart from the way you fight. You know, there's no way you could fight the way you fight and be as creative as you are and not be intelligent. It's just you're expressing it in a different way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. For fighting, yeah, I definitely
have. You have to be smart. Yeah. There's no, unless you're just some crazy freak athlete.
Yeah,
you know?
No, for fighting, yeah, I definitely got like a good sense of what's good and what's bad, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
Have you always had that sense of what's good and what's bad in terms of, like, have you always had good timing for sparring?
Oh, for straight, my most gifted ability that God said here is boxing. Since the first day I walked into the boxing ring, maybe like 3 weeks later was the first time. I'm like, I will let this guy spar, you know. And they put me to spar. And I remember there was a couple coaches there that didn't know me. They were handling already the boxing team for that program. And I used to go to this state-sponsored program, which was like $40 for the whole year. You had access to the gym 3-4 hours a day, and it was like perfect, you know. It was the best thing that could happen to me. So it was a lot of good talent, and then we had a couple national championships come out of that program. And I remember my first sparring session, the coach is coming up to me and goes, "Hey man, how many amateur fights you got?" I go, "No, I've never fought in my life." I go, "What? All right, come over here, man, and start working with you." And it was like immediate, you know. And I just had like a natural born radar where I could see the punches in slow motion, you know. I didn't know at the time how to react to them. I was
right,
you know, just trying to get out of the way, and it would just work, you know. And still to this day, I have that same radar. So that's just a blessing God gave me. And also from the ass whoopings my mother used to give me, because when the belt would come with the metal buckle and the shoes, that's the first test of the reflexes, you know. When I get home like at 2 in the morning, I was like 12, 13 years old, my mom be waiting for me, dodge the broom time.
You've obviously put more work in too, though.
Like, oh yeah,
it's not just this whole resurrection is. You seem more focused.
Definitely more focused. I've always been like ultra focused when I got to fight. You know, like nothing forever in all my career. Like I got to fight. I'm gonna make it to every single practice that's on my schedule. If I got 2 practices today and 3 tomorrow, and whatever it is, I'm always gonna do it. Outside of fighting, though, like once I don't have a fight, those 7-8 weeks, madness would happen. Fucking stupid shit, you know?
So, yeah.
You know, that gets you into trouble, that gets you out of shape, and fucking,
yeah.
I love to eat, you know?
Right.
That's another fucking huge problem.
Right.
Yeah, I love to eat too much, maybe.
What's the heaviest you've ever gotten in between fights?
It was recently. Right before I went on this reality show, I checked my weight. I was at a staggering 2 sexy. And, you know, it was time to cut the weight, man. It was just too much, man.
What reality show is this?
I went on my manager Abe got me this deal. We were having trouble. This was after the Thompson fight. We couldn't really get a matchup, couldn't get a fight that I wanted like a tough fight, and they were kind of offering me like Ultimate Fighters and things like that. And no disrespect to them, I just, at that stage in my career, I want the hardest fighter, the best fighter that I could get. And he's like, calls me up one day, he's, "Hey, I got this reality show." And I was like, "Oh, awesome, click." You know? and calls me back the next day. Yeah, what? Don't hang up yet. Listen to me. You know, I think you might like this. It's not like that. It's not like a Jersey Shore. It's like a competitive. Like, you're going to compete against people. I'm like, nah, no thanks, bro. You know, and then we talk like a week later. What's going on? Did I get a fight? No, we can't get you no fight yet unless you want to fight Joe Blow or this guy. You know, I'm like, already been sitting out 7 months nursing my injuries. I'm already thinking, yeah, I'll fight whoever it is, you know. So while this is going on, the reality show's pitching numbers at us. They keep increasing the number every time. They get to a decent number. They talk to my manager. My manager talks to me. He's like, yeah, I can't get you no fight right now that you want. Why don't you just go there a couple weeks, 1 or 2 weeks, collect these paychecks, come back, and that's it, you know. And the reality show is like you go through like a parkour kind of obstacles, and then at the end you got to aim. So while your heart rate's all up, you'd have to like knock down water bottles with a frisbee or a football or something like that. But the cool part is that I'm up against Olympic gymnasts, parkour dudes, tennis players, soccer players, all types of athletes were just mixed in there, and we're just all competing in this thing. So it was pretty cool, you know. It was an awesome experience. I ended up lasting 13 weeks in the show, and the show ran for about 15 weeks. So I got pretty far deep in it, you know. And the coolest thing was that I got to be alone by myself, because one of the things is there's no cell phone, there's no TV, there's no music on the show. So it's just the interaction of us. And outside of that, that's it. That's your only interactions. You don't have no interactions with the town, people, or nothing. They strictly forbid that. You know, they want you like caged up. So it was awesome. I thought, you know, after a while, it was the best. I'd go work out in the nature, be by myself in the mountains or in the beach and just chilling, and you really get to notice yourself. And that's why I call it the resurrection, because I thought about like all the negative dumb things that I've done in my life, and just let me eliminate them, whether I like them in my life or not. Let me just eliminate that shit, and that's it, you know. That's why we call it the resurrection, you know.
Yeah, well, that fight with Till, man, if anybody had any doubts, that fight erased all of them. And that was I mean, Till was top five right when you knocked him out. I believe so.
Yeah,
and so that puts you in the hunt now. And what a crazy goddamn division that is now.
Yes, sir.
I mean, we got Robbie Lawler, who's he's about to fight Tyron Woodley again. They're going to have a rematch. That's a crazy fucking fight.
It's a crazy fight.
Usman is waiting to see who's going to be next for him at 170 now that he's the champ. I mean, Wonderboy just got KO'd by Pettis, which is crazy. That was crazy.
And now RDA, which is a ranked 70-pounder, is going to fight he's going to fight the 55. I just forgot his name right now. The second. Kevin Lee.
Oh, yeah. Kevin Lee's going to go up to 70 now.
So those are the things that throw me off. Like, if Pettis stays at 70, awesome, right? But if he goes down to 55, it kind of, like, makes it more of a weird, you know, setup. And same thing with Kevin Lee. I don't know if he's staying up at 70 or he's doing, like, a one-time, one-night stand thing, you know?
He's staying, according to him. When I talked to him, it was just too hard for him. It's like 55 just ruined him. Every time he got down there, you've met him. He's big.
Yeah,
he's a big guy.
Yeah.
And he's walking around, like, 185, easy, maybe more. And thick, you know, so like, man, there's not a lot of weight there that you can cut off, 30 fucking pounds.
If he stays, no problem, I love it, you know, but when they come and go, it like
fucks with the division.
It makes it a labyrinth, you know?
Yeah, I don't understand why the UFC is so reluctant to have more weight classes. I really don't get it. Like Dana said that the 165-pound weight class will never happen while he's running the UFC, and he's going to be running it for the next 7 years, he said. Was it ESPN Plus? Kevin Lee's want to make Rafael Dos Anjos fight at 165.
He's asking him to see like if they can make a backroom deal to just both weigh in at 165 instead of 170, just to sort of force it.
What? That's not forcing it. Well, he's trying. Why would that? Doesn't even make any sense. That's so weird. I mean, 5 pounds is not that much of a difference.
It's not.
But it would be nice if there was a 10-pound gap. I don't know. They both, I mean, Dos Anjos has fought successfully at 170. He looked great when he fought Lawler, you know.
Beat Magny, too.
Yeah, but I feel like he's probably a guy that should be 165, too, you know.
They can make it like a 162 or something, 163, something like that. Then.
Yeah, I don't know. We're probably just fucking whistling in the wind, though. They have their ideas. I don't want to run that business. I don't want to tell them what to do. Fuck running that. Imagine running the UFC. What a nightmare that would be.
Depends how much money you're getting paid for, right?
I guess. Still, once you have all that money for a few years and then you're dealing with high blood pressure and your fucking panic attacks in the middle of the night.
They got things for high blood pressure that are pretty good.
They do?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Marijuana.
That does help. Yeah. What's it like in Florida getting weed? Is it hard now?
Florida's a fucking mafia, man. And I'm going to get killed for this. But, you know, every state went legal and had the flower and shit.
Mm-hmm.
We only had wax.
That's it?
That's it, man.
And that's for medical, right?
You have to have AIDS. Yeah, for medical. They're literally about to become, I think flower just became legal in Florida, or it's about to become legal.
Medical,
one of the two.
Right?
Yeah, medical.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, no, just smoking the smoke.
I wonder if they're going to be easy with the medical recommendations the way they used to be for opiates. Opiates, you'd be able to just, you'd be able to get oxys with, like, just go to a doctor, one of those little pain management centers.
Oh, in Florida.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
I wonder how hard it's going to be to get weed, because they obviously there's someone who's spending some money trying to keep it from being fully legal there.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think a big part of it is because, like, South Florida culture, there's a lot of natural growers over there.
Mm-hmm.
They grew, like, it's always been a big business. It's illegal, of course, to grow marijuana in Florida and sell it, you know, especially in Miami, Florida. And a lot of people did this. So I think when the rules came about legalizing medically marijuana, they said, we're not going to have plants because then everybody's going to grow plants. And, you know, it's like we can't really charge them because it's legal, you know. So that's why I think they did the wax. Because you can't grow
it's
the wax.
It's hard to manufacture.
And, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
And I don't really agree. It's like smoking wax. Like somebody giving me wax, like, oh, here, smoke this. I don't really know what's in there. You know, I always feels like that from cocaine to crack. People thought, oh, it's still cocaine. And then you're a fucking crackhead, you know. So the wax always, I don't care how many times somebody tells me, no, this is super safe. I get it, you know, but I'd rather the flower if I'm going to smoke.
Yeah, it's just pure. But apparently one of the things they're dealing with in California is pesticides.
Yeah.
It's some weed, you know, grown by shitty growers that has pesticides on it. You're smoking these pesticides. I mean, this is why it should be legal, so you could test things.
Exactly.
Test things and find out what's pure and what's not. Make things organic.
You know? Only the best of the best make it to that other side, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just weird. It's weird that it's so easy to get opiates in Florida. It's so hard to get weed.
I wouldn't know nothing about that.
I wouldn't know nothing about that either. So when you look at the landscape now, you're obviously in the running for a shot at the title. Has anybody give you any indication of what you would have to do to get a shot at Usman or to be next in line?
Well, the next one is this idiot. I won't even mention his name on your show because I'm not going to make him famous. He's a fucking idiot, you know? But fight this guy and then go for the title. That's what they told me.
So you have to fight somebody else?
Yeah.
What does his name rhyme with? Dolby?
No.
You don't want to say who it is?
No, I was trying to think of
Leon Edwards?
No, not that guy. He just made that guy famous too.
I think you made him famous a couple weeks ago.
I know.
Who?
Schmen.
Who?
Schmen, yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're supposed to fight at Ben Askren in July.
That fucking dork.
You don't like him?
Not one bit.
Really?
Not one bit. Nah, not as a
person.
Why
did I forget that fight was scheduled? What's the problem with Ben Askren?
He's that new age, you know, and he's like a fucking 40-year-old science teacher, too. I don't know why he acts like he's new age. But he's like these new age dudes that just fucking talk. Like, just talk and talk and talk about everybody. Shut the fuck up. Because when somebody sees you in person, you're not that guy. And like I said, I don't come from this technology world. I come from, like, if you say, like, yo, fucking Joe, you're a fucking idiot. Well, you're going to punch me in the face, or I better be ready for it. You know, I'm just not going around disrespecting people. I get taught respect because if not, somebody's going to make you respect, you know?
Right.
But these guys nowadays, they grow up with these little things. And they can just say whatever the fuck they want. Words carry weight, especially my kids can read your stupid comments. You know, my kids have access to the internet now. I just don't like them, you know. One incident I remind you, when Khabib won the title, right? And Benny immediately comes out, I'm Khabib's kryptonite, I would smash him or something like that. Like, for starters, you're 70-pounder, you fucking moron. He's a 55-pounder and you're not even in the UFC, you know. He's that type of guy, an attention whore. Look at me. I don't even like his fighting style. I like a lot of wrestler style because if that's what you did and you're imposing it and winning, awesome. But when your sole purpose is just to hug somebody's leg as hard as you can, and then I don't know what you think about the Robbie fight, but he didn't win that fight in my eyes, you know?
We Robbie watched was that not fight asleep. Several times. We watched that fight several times. I thought that Robbie was asleep for a second, and then Usman showed it to me, and then I changed my mind. And then Herb Dean came on and talked about it, and I changed my mind again because Herb Dean was saying that what he was concerned with was the way the arm dropped and that it was a cervical lock. Essentially, when you have a bulldog choke, it puts some serious leverage on your neck. He's like, and he's seen guys go out from that and their whole body goes paralyzed. And he saw a guy where that happened to, and he came back. He got his movement back again, but for a while it was pretty fucking scary. So he was getting choked out, you know, by getting his neck pinched. It was pinching down the nerve. He was worried that that was happening with Robbie. He said the way his arm dropped, he goes, it wasn't normal. And he goes, and it gave me some serious concern. Ben Askren said that he let go of the choke a little bit when Herb came over to him because he thought Herb was going to stop it because he thought Robbie was out. And he thinks that during that time when he let go, Robbie came back to life, which could have happened. I don't know. It's hard for me to say. But I feel like in Herb Dean's situation, I think he did the right thing because the arm dropping was fucking weird. And
the arm dropping was a little weird.
Yeah.
But he wasn't out. I never seen nobody go to sleep doing this. You know,
that's so weird. I've seen people go to sleep. Ashley Evans Smith went to sleep
with the thumbs up. With the
thumbs up. But here's what Herb said that made sense. He goes, "Was it the thumbs up?" He goes, "I want a thumbs up. If someone looks at me, I want this. I want this. It's not. Is your arm down in that position?" He goes, "Yeah, but was it this? Did he do this?" Or was his arm down? I don't know. Only Robbie knows whether or not he was out. He says he wasn't. So you have to also say, he's in the middle of war.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, if it's up to me, I want the guy to go peace sign with the cheese. Right. The guy's defending a choke. What the fuck? You know.
But he did. That was the other thing that Herb said. He didn't grab for the choke. He said the natural defense would be to get his hands on the hands and try to separate them. He didn't do that. He
said that's Herb's natural defense. Maybe Robbie, because he's seen this guy do it, has a fucking a thing. You know, maybe Robbie can't be put to sleep from there. There's guys that are weird like that, that are just certain positions, they could go 3 minutes, you're choking them, and then they don't go to sleep. Maybe Robbie's that guy. All I know is he wasn't sleeping.
That's what Robbie said. Robbie said that he was waiting for Ben to tire his arms out. That's what he said. He said he felt the squeeze. He said the squeeze is really tight, but he's like, I'll just let him gas his arms out here. That was his thought. Look, I mean, Michael Chiesa said that when Kevin Lee got his back and they stopped the fight before he went out. He said, I let my hands go because I was concentrating on my neck. I was just tightening up my neck and trying to keep my blood flowing.
I think that one was a little different. That one was a rear naked, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was different.
So that's,
yeah.
You're going to go to sleep eventually.
And that one let a guy go to sleep. Like, that one, you should let a guy go to sleep.
Let him.
Yeah.
Nothing happens. You just wake him right up. Hey, he went to sleep. No big deal. Maybe they pee their pants while they went to sleep. No big deal.
It's certain neck cracks where you just go, ugh.
No, but that one's not going to put you in a wheelchair, especially not from Ben's ass, man.
Probably. So your take is on all of this trash-talking, media hype shit that you see going on now. You don't like it.
I don't. I think I fast-forward. It's distasteful right now to a certain point. But if you just fast-forward to the guys like me when I was 14 years old watching this sport, now you're looking at the dudes right now doing it, you're going to grow up and think, oh, well, I got to do the same shit. I just got to fucking talk a shitload of shit. I don't really got to go to the gym that much. Just got to have a banging, lit social network account, and I'm fucking golden, you know? And we see it, you know? Sage Northcutt, for example, you know? Great talent and stuff, but what he was getting paid out didn't make sense to a lot of the fighters, you know? Why was he getting paid so much? Because of social media? Is he really bringing in those people into the chairs and into the TV because you have a lot of likes? You know, it's the things that I wonder. Not like to diss the girls or nothing, but sometimes girls have like tremendous amount of followers, you know? Do those numbers translate to viewers on the TV or like butts in seats or any of that? Like I would like to know, you know? And a lot of times when I've asked like people in the UFC and stuff, they say no, those numbers don't translate. So why do they get more money? You know, I'm not talking about the girls getting more money. You know, I'm talking about guys that have like a social media presence that are just getting more money.
Don't you think it's kind of translate a certain amount?
No, I'm sure it does. I'm sure it does.
Like guys like Colby. Colby's got to translate. I mean, he talks so much shit. He you know, gets people excited about the fights. There's something to it.
I don't know. I
appreciate what you're saying, though. And I appreciate the way ONE FC handles things. Because they concentrate on just fighters being honorable and fighting their best and fighting the best fighters they can fight. And they don't emphasize that shit talking at all. They emphasize the martial arts aspect of it.
I get it. Me and you don't like each other. John Jones and DC, I love it because you can feel these right. guys don't like each other.
Yeah, you
they
feel it. Yeah.
Kill each other, you know?
But to me, but it's okay.
Everybody's doing it.
When Max Holloway fought Dustin, there was none of that. There was just two guys who were the best in their weight class. I mean, Max is the best 145-pound ever, and Dustin Poirier is absolutely one of the best 155-pounders alive, and they're going to go after it. And it was beautiful.
Two dogs.
It was beautiful. It was
no
beautiful.
Barking, just biting and fighting. Just
shaking
two
hands,
dogs.
Full respect, before and after.
And I get a lot of people like, they have that... I hate you syndrome going into the fight. So they don't want to shake hands. They fuck you. I don't like you, you know? But when they're giving so much attention to that WWF stuff and pushing you to the forefront, that I don't really like, you know? And just to think that the kids watching it are going to be even worse. They're going to do it to the next power, you know?
Did you get upset? I mean, when you went over and got into a fight with Leon, you were being interviewed. He was yelling some shit at you while you're being interviewed, and you walked over. And one of the things that I like what you said is you walked over, your hands behind your back. You're like, look, would you talk, say what the fuck you want to say to me. But then when he was standing in front of you, like he wanted to punch you, you're like, okay.
Well, you know, for starters,
what was he saying to you?
Well, initially, I was doing my interview, and he's crossing by, and he's with his corner man, and I don't know if this guy consumes a lot of drugs or what. That he thought that would intimidate him. He was walking like this, looking at me and like pacing back and forth. And I'm trying to do my interview, you know? And he asked me something about something, a date. And I say, maybe, maybe not. And then he tells me to shut up. You know, we're everybody watching this back home from Miami was like, you should have punched him as soon as he asked you a question while you're interviewed. Because that's my natural instinct, you know? If you're getting interviewed and some fucking idiot comes here and cuts your interview off, bro, you should get punched or slapped upside your head, you know? That'll teach you respect not to do that to nobody else again. I should have immediately done it, but I didn't. I answered his question politely. Maybe, maybe not. He goes on to say, shut up after that. I can't take that. My daughter might be watching this interview. I've been telling her, stand up to bullies your whole life. Don't go running to somebody and telling them, oh, so-and-so is picking on me. Handle it yourself. That's what's wrong with this country, I think, with this whole, if somebody picks on you, go tell somebody else. I'm not going to tell authorities. This hooligan's picking on me. I'm going to handle it myself, you know? Because I'm going to see him again. He's going to think he could pick on me. Got to handle it myself, you know? I'm in my interview, man. You're going to steal my moment? I just worked out here. I just kicked some butt out here. You barely won a split decision in your own country. I knocked this dude out, and you're trying to steal my shine like this? That's what I'm saying. Like, and then he got famous off that, which I hate. So only thing I could take back about that night, that it wasn't filmed. If they hadn't filmed it, it'd be even better, you know? He was just gone off in silence, you know? Leon got his ass
But I think it helped you, too.
No, did it help me? Yeah, but it helped him more than anything.
Nah.
Yeah.
No, people it helped you.
This, people know who this hooligan is.
People know Masvidal doesn't take any shit.
People have known that since...
They know, but they
since
like
before
to see it.
Rainbows had color, they already knew that, man. They didn't need to see me whooping this to know that.
People like
know
to
that.
See it. They like to see it.
They like to get remembered, huh?
Yeah. They like Maybe. To see people have consequences for shit talking in this weird era of constant shit talking, you know? I think people enjoy it. They like it. And if you guys ever fight, it makes it a bigger fight for sure.
I guess, man. You know?
I guess.
But
yeah.
Does that like... I beat number three. I've been in this sport for a while. I've been beating up guys. Would that validate him to fight me when he hasn't beaten a top 10 guy yet?
No.
He's still yet to beat a top 10 guy, you know? Like, but he could get that fight off that. That's a new age and era that we're
in,
you know?
Right. That's a concern. Yeah, that's a concern.
I'll fight. When he's beating a top 10 guy, I'm going to be the first guy to expose him, to break his face. But until that moment comes, you're talking about the business side. Because you already saw on the personal side, any day of the week, I will address you. But on the business side, get to my level, buddy. Put in the fucking work. Go be the top 10 guy. Knock him the fuck out.
Did you worry at all about getting in trouble for punching somebody in another country?
I was scared out of my fucking life,
yeah,
Joe.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
I was scared. I thought this guy was going to kill me, man. Oh. I might have not looked it, but I was scared out of my life.
Yeah, I get it.
I'm very cold-blooded, you know. I get that from genetics, from my pops and them. But I was scared out of my mind. I thought this guy was going to take everything I had, you know.
You had to do that.
I had to defend
myself. I understand
myself,
it. Man. I understand. But did you worry at all about them arresting you or any weird shit like that over there? I mean, you're in another country.
I wanted to press charges.
Ah.
That's how scared I was, but I'm not going to press charges because
I understand.
I'm a man.
Yeah.
But that's how I felt.
You were in danger.
I was fucking hell of in danger. Did you not see? It was not just one assailant. It was him and his crew of hooligans. You know,
hooligans.
Lawless people. I had to defend myself. I did everything in my right to defend myself. It was one against like three or four dudes, and they know it. You know? It's on video.
Okay, I understand. And so, what did the police say to that?
Oh, they didn't tell me nothing, man.
They didn't tell you shit?
I didn't speak to no police.
That's amazing.
No police for me. No talking to police. Anyways.
You started me up in the Spanglish immediately. Yeah.
No. We go on mute and I not speak English. Huh? Okay? No speak English.
Yeah. I mean, how many times have you fought in England before?
Well, first time.
Yeah. So, like, if you go the rest of your career and you can't go to England, oh, well.
No, that would suck, okay, though. I really liked England.
Did you?
The fans were so knowledgeable, yeah, and they were just cool. Even the ones that were like Till fans, mm-hmm, would say like a funny joke to me or something cool, but it wasn't like that weird bad energy, you know? Even if they were Till fans, right, just be like, oh, my boy Till's going to get you, you know? But it'd be like funny and how they say cheeky, you know? It was a great experience. Everywhere I went, the people were super, super duper cool.
Yeah, Brazil's rough if someone's fighting a Brazilian.
Yeah.
They don't.
I've heard the story. I've yet to fight
super in nationalistic and proud, very proud. So they're not into people coming over there and fighting Brazilians. They're not going to be friendly to you. Yeah. But England's different, man. They're very polite.
Very knowledgeable, too. Yeah, they're one of the countries that's been around for a while with the sport.
Yeah. What'd you think about that Stylebender Gaslam fight?
Oh, that was pretty good, man.
That was wild
that
shit.
That was pretty good. Was
tested. Pretty good. Both.
Yeah, both tested, exactly.
Yeah, both tested.
Gaslam's got a ton of heart, man.
Phew, he's a tank.
Was nobody going to get mad at him if in the fifth round he said, you know what?
Yeah.
He just fucking kept going. Stop,
dug in, survived. I mean, incredible. It looked like Stylebender was going to take him out several times.
Yeah.
I mean, what a fight. And to have Kelvin land the first big shot early on and drop Stylebender and mm-hmm. show him some real adversity and let him know, hey, man, you can get knocked the fuck out mm-hmm. in this fight. Mm-hmm. You know, that was a real awesome moment, man. What a fight, too, man. Back and forth and.
Yep.
Ooh, so much chaos. And to have Kelvin head kick him and rock him. How about that shit? The thing that really rocked Stylebender was a fucking head kick from Kelvin.
I thought really Kelvin would press him up against the cage, maybe mm-hmm. get a takedown, but just definitely keep him up against the cage and work him there, you know,
yeah.
with his wrestling background. I didn't see that going like that, you know?
Yeah, there was some wild scrambles on the ground, too. Stylebender threw up that fucking triangle. It's like, whoa, he's got a game on the ground.
No, he's a gifted athlete.
And fast as fuck, man.
And more than just gifted, you could tell he puts in the work.
100%.
Know?
He's smart as fuck.
Yeah.
He's smart and creative and just has a broad encyclopedia of first of all, striking knowledge. But obviously, when he went to the ground, he knew what the fuck to do, man. Yeah. He was throwing up triangles. He locked Kelvin up in a triangle. Yeah. It's just... they're slippery and it's the end of the fight and, you know, he popped out of it with all, obviously Kelvin used the right technique to get out of it too. But that was a serious fucking triangle attempt.
It was a serious fight, man. That's a good,
serious fight.
You pay your hard earned money for that fight.
Man. Oh yeah. Well, I hope enough people got a chance to watch it because I don't know what that ESPN Plus debacle was because apparently there were a bunch of people that couldn't get it. Like there was
because you got to sign up right to the app.
Mm-hmm. And there was some crashes and some people wouldn't work on their device and they had to order it online and it still didn't work.
All pay-per-views now are bought through ESPN.
Yes.
Whoa, I didn't know that. I thought it was just like some...
No, it's all of them from now on. So, look, you have DirecTV, tough shit. You got to get it through ESPN+. I think it's a good move because I think in the future, that's where everything's going to be. I think the UFC just got way ahead of it. Whereas most people are still like boxing matches and shit. You're getting most of them. You're getting them off of pay-per-view on DirecTV or cable or whatever the fuck you use. But now they're using that DAZN. You know, DAZN has a lot of fights you get from that app. You know, a lot of boxing matches. They're the ones who signed Canelo to that huge, huge deal. They signed Triple G.
Yes.
You know, so they're doing a lot of streaming shit, too.
Yeah, I saw a commercial with them the other day at Dave & Buster's with Tracy Morgan, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, streaming, I think, is the future. And I think that's why the DAZN got way ahead of it. And then ESPN Plus is getting way ahead of it, too. I think they see where the writing on the wall is.
Yeah, just the... From here to there, mm-hmm. it's going to take a little bit of time. Everybody's used to just pay-per-view, DirecTV, you know, whatever, Comcast.
People are going to get used to having their TV connected to the internet. There's a lot of fucking people that don't have their TV connected to the internet. You know, so once people start using, once people start using like Apple TV and connect through that, and then get the app through Apple, or use Android or whatever the fuck they use to get online, it'll be normal to have that on your TV in 5 years.
Yeah,
but right now it's rough if you don't have that and you want to see the fights.
Or if you come from the Stone Age like me and you got to go through the internet labyrinth, it gets crazy, man.
Yeah, I wonder how the pay structure works. Like, say if you get a title fight. Say you beat Askren and then you get a title fight with Usman. How do they do that with ESPN Plus as opposed to, like, pay-per-view points or something like that?
That's so true, man.
How does that work? Yeah, look at you. You're in pain.
No, I'm using brain power. That requires energy.
Yeah.
That's why there's this gentleman by the name of Abraham Kawai. Let him do it all that, man.
It's a good move.
Yeah.
Let Abe handle it.
Yeah, he's been there, done that, negotiated bigger contracts in mind. So just, hey, bro, take care of this one, you know?
Now, this Askren fight, you're fighting him in July. What is that, July 6th?
Yes, sir.
When do you, like, how much of a camp do you give yourself? How much of, like, a fully dedicated, just all-in camp?
All day, every day.
All day, every day.
If you look at him from a skill set, Ben's not even worth waking up before like 10 a.m. in the morning. But I don't like this dude, man. Before my alarm goes off, I'm already awake. I want to break his fucking face, man. I want to break his fucking rib cage. And I don't want to knock him out early on. I just want to torture that guy, man. If I get the chance to torture him for 14 minutes and 50 seconds before I stop him, that's what I'm going to do, man. You know, I don't like the dude. At all. I met him a long time ago. He's a fucking prick, man. I don't like him, man. There's not too many people that I genuinely dislike. He's one of them, you know? If I was to see him right now, probably wouldn't be too friendly of a greeting, you know?
Now, do you base this on how he talks shit and just plays around and tries to hype things up? Or have you had a real conversation with him?
Combination of things, you know? Like, I'm the type of dude that if we train, you go to American Top Team, Joe, and let's say I get lucky and I tap you out twice, I'm not going to ever tell nobody that, because that's not my glory moment. That's just fucking training. I don't give a fuck about that. I already forgot about that. But there's some people that violate that man code of gym. And they go, I went to American Top Team. And like, he's that type of pussy, you know, like, oh, he's talking about gym stories. Like, he came over to American Top Team after I dumped him on his head. We kept wrestling. He out-scrambled me, and he said, yeah, you beat me wrestling. But we were straight wrestling. Two-time national champion. You're proud of that? You're telling people that, you know? And that just shows me his character, you know? He's not he's not who he pretends to be. And then he talks so much online. And then I could have respected him a little bit if he had held to his guns, but I see him in London. And as soon as I see him, I start walking towards him. He goes, hey, man, I'm going to spare you. I'm not going to say nothing until after your fight. Ben, don't do me no fucking favors, bro. You're not doing me no favors. Say whatever the fuck you want when you want it, you know? And I addressed him, and I went up to talk to him, and UFC got involved. He put his head down, and they escorted him out of the hotel, and he never came back to that hotel, you know? And he actually wished me good luck at some point, too, like right before, like, why are you doing this, man? You're not that person on social media that you portray to be. You're not, you know, so you're fake as fuck. You're selling something to the public that is not there, obviously. And you're a coward. Fuck it. Let's throw that in there, too. And if people don't believe me, tune in July 6th. I'll show you how much of a coward he is.
Just to play devil's advocate, don't you think that what he's doing is smart marketing? To play devil, I know you don't like it. I know you don't like it. But to play devil's advocate...
But it's corny, though. When he looks back, it's corny. Like, ain't nobody going, oh, he just wants validation. He wants to be accepted, you know?
I think half of what he's doing is corny on purpose. All that boom roasted shit. Come on, man. Half of that stuff is corny on purpose.
No. That guy, you haven't seen him and you haven't hung around with him. That guy's just fucking corny. It's in his DNA, bro.
I like him.
You can't.
I like talking to him. He's a smart motherfucker.
He might be smart, man, but he's a corny motherfucker, bro. You know? And he's cocky for all the wrong reasons. I just can't wait.
I love the fact that you're a purist like this, though. I really do.
I want to hurt that dude, man.
I know you do.
I want to hurt that dude.
It's going to be a great fight. It's one of those interesting fights because you've got good wrestling, takedown defense. You've got very good wrestling. You've got very good takedowns yourself. But you clearly have a big advantage in striking. Yeah. So it's one of those, can he impose his will? Can he get a hold of you?
He's going to get a hold of these fucking nuts, man. This dude, bro. I've had numerous people talk shit to me in the past, but they'll say it to my face, and man, I gain respect for you.
Right.
Like, cool, bro. I'm a punk or whatever you call it. You said it to my fucking face, mm-hmm. you know? But you say it online. It's just the whole way it gets said about it. You say it online, and then when you see me, what's up? Hey, how are you? Hey, picture, man? Fucking kidding me, man? What the right. fuck is it? Where I feel like I've been brought out from like a twilight zone, from a different dimension sometimes. Because a lot of these rapper fighters that you see acting like criminals on the social media, when they see me, hey, what's up, bro? Let me get a picture. Oh, fucking fanboyed out. I go, man, I could have sworn you were just mentioning my name, saying some shit, bro. That's fucking nuts to me. It blows my mind.
Right.
I'm such a simpleton, bro. It just blows my mind every time.
No, you're a purist.
I don't know if it's a purist, simple. I don't know where you want to put me, but it's
not simpleton. It's mind-blowing. You just don't want to play that game. You're not interested in that game.
It's mind-blowing.
Yeah. Man. Listen, Khabib's not interested in that fucking game either.
Yeah.
When he was on top of Conor, let's talk now. Yeah, bam. Yeah, let's talk. Yeah. Come on, Connor. Let's talk. Let's talk now.
I love that
Same shit. Purist. I love it.
I love that shit, bro.
I do. I appreciate when that shit talking has consequences.
Yeah.
I like some shit talking, though. It's fun.
I like shit talking when you back it up. You know? Yeah. Back that shit up.
Yeah.
Now you see me in a hallway lobby and fucking run to security and get escorted out.
Who's the guy you fought in the past you had the most beef with before you actually fought?
I don't know. I never really had like
real beef.
Nah.
So not like this fight. Like Till and you went back and forth a little bit, right?
No. We went back and forth like, hey, you want to fight? Yeah, let's do it. All right, fuck it. Boom, boom, boom. But we never.
But it was pretty respectful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Till's a cool dude, man.
What about Cowboy?
Cowboy. I mean, yeah, a little bit of beef, you know. Nothing crazy. Like if I see him in the street, we're gonna start fucking fighting or nothing. You know? Is that what you mean by like beef or just like we're going back and forth,
like talking shit to each other? Like
yeah, me and Cowboy. Yeah, you're right. Me and Cowboy were talking a lot of shit back and forth to each other. You know, yeah. It's coming from genuine places from mm-hmm. both sides. You know, so it was good. It gave that fire. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely one. It came from like a little bit of hostility,
but not like this Askren one.
I respected Cowboy going into that fight. You know, obviously, I think he's a fucking stud, bro, and he proves it again by having the most wins, most knockouts, submissions. Dude's a stud. I don't think Askren's even yet to get a win in the UFC. You know, I just think about it like if I had fought Robbie Lawler, which was a great champion and has done amazing things in the sport since the start of Robbie till now, bro, the guy's still fighting, man. I remember watching him in the UFC back in the day, knocking out
37 and a half.
What the fuck? This
guy's, that's what he came along. 37 and a half.
Still fucking laying people the fuck out.
And looked amazing.
And looks, yeah.
Looked fucking amazing. Looked amazing physically when he hoisted Askren up the air and dumped him on his head and then started just driving his fucking knuckles through his brain. And it shows you how tough Askren is. The dude's durable as fuck, man. He handled that.
He's built for survival. Even by his body type, you can tell, like, physiologically, he's just built for a guy like me to put him under the radar. Like, oh, this guy's not a threat. Look at him. You know? But it's not going to work. I already know what to do to this guy and just fucking hurt him, man. Even the way he's fucking built is for patheticness, man. But let's skip the subject, man. Let's go to somebody else, man. I'll make this guy famous on your show.
That's too late.
Too late.
Well, listen, man, when they put his picture up on the marquee, he gets a big pop. It's crazy. People love Askren.
I guess. I don't know. I haven't seen
that. They loved him before he fought in the UFC, too.
I've never seen that because I saw in England, and, man, in England, they didn't fucking hated his ass, man. They were booing him out of the fucking stage and shit.
Because he looks like he belongs there. Right? He looks like, you left us, lad. He looks like an English guy, doesn't he?
I guess, man.
I mean, doesn't that, like, what do you think his nationality is, Askren? He looks like he probably has some English in him.
Yeah, sure.
Curly hair. A lot of English dudes have curly hair.
Forrest over there.
Yeah. You got to admit that the dude's got a wild-ass wrestling style.
It's funky, yeah.
Yeah, it's very unusual. Very effective. You know he's going to have that wrestling match with Jordan Burroughs.
He's going to get smashed.
Is that before or after yours?
I think it's before.
Does that concern you? He might get injured doing that?
I don't give a fuck. If he does, that's because he faked the injury out, you know. He knows what he's doing. He's a big boy, you know.
Right.
It's like, if you're going to fight Joel Romero, and one of your teammates might come up to you and tell you, like, hey, man, I think you should fake the injury. I know Joel Romero, just fake the injury and cop out of that fight. You don't want no problems with that guy, you know? So that might be what he's trying to do. Who knows, man?
Mm. Damn. That fucking 185-pound division with Romero in it. Like, what a division now. Now with Stylebender and Gastelum, and then Stylebender's going to fight Whitaker. And I hope Yoel fights Borachina. They're supposed to fight, right? Paulo Costa, they're supposed to fight.
I don't know. I thought they were. Well, I know he's going to fight Jacare, then Joel got hurt. And
yeah. And Yoel was supposed to fight Paulo first, but then someone got hurt there. It might have been Paulo, but Paulo's healed up again, and the Jacare fight's out. And so they set a new fight up for Jacare. So Jacare's got an opponent, and now Yoel doesn't. Man. It's a fucking crazy division, though.
Yeah.
That division's a real shark tank.
Tell you the truth, I would like to see Joel fight for the title. Because I feel like, not to take nothing away from Whitaker, because I think he's one of the baddest dudes on the planet. I feel 100%. Like Joel won.
I feel like he won, too.
The second fight. The first fight, straight up Whitaker won. The second one, I straight up thought Joel won. I was actually there in his corner, and I was like, oh, we got this. Wow. You know, he won the third round, won the fourth, won the fifth.
And also with the new scoring. Damage. Yeah, yes, significant
with the new damage. With the new
significant damage. I think, I don't know if they used the new scorecards, the new scoring method, but if they did and he didn't win, then it's a real travesty. But he had him hurt. And that's
there wasn't no 10-8 rounds, right. No 10-7 rounds.
That's the big difference in that fight, in my opinion. Robert Whitaker for sure scored. He fought well. He won rounds. But when Yoel hurt him, he really fucking hurt him. And there was no moments like that for Whitaker where he had Yoel staggered and almost out. Whitaker's a fucking beast, though, man.
He's super intelligent, dude, I think, when he fights, man.
Him and Stylebender is going to be very unusual, because that's a big step up to go from Stylebender, to go from the very first fight in the UFC, which was only like a year and a half ago, all the way up to Robert Whitaker in a year and a half. It's amazing. It's an amazing step up.
Whitaker's
special.
Legit, man. Yeah.
And he's another guy that was 170, just cutting way too much weight.
Way too much.
Couldn't do it. Went up to 185 and really found his own place.
Yeah.
So many guys, I think, they're in that category where they'd be healthier if they went up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But when you saw Holloway versus Poirier, did you get the impression that really Holloway should stay at 145?
Yes and no, because I know personally DP, so I know he packs a punch. So I don't think it's like, oh, your career at 55 is done, Max. No, you fought one of the more clever, powerful punchers. Because
one of the better boxers.
Yeah, one of the better boxers. And to the knit and grit of it, man, DP is like a brawler. You know, he likes to brawl, but an intelligent one, you know?
Yeah.
He wants to hit you as much as he can without getting hit. Very greedy, you know? And I think it was just a bad fight for Max. I think Max could fucking... There's a lot of guys Max murders at 155, I think, you know?
Top-notch I think so, guys. Too. I think so, too. But I think at 145, he's almost unstoppable.
Yeah, I don't even know how he makes 145. He's
I don't know how he
me.
Makes it either, but when he gets down there, man, he's just something special. Yeah. He doesn't. It doesn't seem to diminish him in his performance.
No,
like, if you look at his performance against Ortega, he can make it. He can make that weight, and once he gets there, man, good luck catching up.
That gas tank of his is
incredible.
Relentless.
It's incredible.
Footwork,
mm-hmm.
Timing, the fakes that he throws, and then he switches up, and then he explodes, and then he fakes, and he explodes. As I love his rhythm and patterns.
Yeah, very, very great at distance management, and also switching stances and being creative, and never always giving you a different look.
Yes,
he's amazing, man.
Yeah.
He's a special guy. He really is.
He's at my pound for pound. This, you know,
mine as well. And he takes a loss like a fucking man. I mean, just takes that loss so well. You know, he's like, hey, it is what it is.
Yeah.
He's a great champion. He beat a champion. You know, oh, no, I'm still the champ at 145. He's like laughing and shit.
Yeah.
Like he
it's
took
it.
He,
should be, you know?
He gave everything he had. He came up short. No excuses. And full respect to Dustin. It was great, man.
Maybe
it was
a year or two from now, he could run it back.
100%.
A couple fights from
hey,
now.
Hey, he's only 27.
Yeah.
That's even crazier. Yeah. Already the best featherweight of all time. One of the best pound-for-pound fighters for sure on the planet Earth. Only 27.
Yeah, man. He's good. And his grappling defensively is pretty fucking good. Yeah. He throws those chokes up and shit.
Yep. He can do everything.
Scary dude, man.
Yeah, he does everything. He really does. I mean, it's an amazing time for the sport. It really is. There's so much talent right now.
I wish they still had the 25 division. I like that division. You know?
Well, they still kind of do. I mean, Benavidez is still trying to set up something. You know, and if Cejudo goes up and beats Marlon Moraes and decides to still defend his 125-pound title, that's a huge fight.
That's a sick fight.
Marlon's a scary cat.
Yeah, he's a scary cat, but so is Cejudo.
Oh, yeah?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
I remember when Cejudo won that gold medal,
mm-hmm.
we were watching, we were already like fans of him and stuff, and he came over to American Top Team not long afterwards. And he was already working out, and he said, no, I'm going to keep wrestling, but I want to fight eventually. And I remember watching him, this guy work out. He was like maybe 20, 21, because I think he's the youngest gold medalist ever in at least American history. I don't know if all wrestling history. So I remember watching him work out, and I was like, man, that dude one day will do something big in the sport if he commits to it the way he did the wrestling.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he's done fucking huge things, you know?
Well, the way he took out TJ, I definitely thought it was an early stoppage, but I definitely thought TJ was fucked. He was in a bad place. And if Cejudo, if they just let it go for another 10, 15 seconds, he might have shut the lights out on TJ. I mean, we don't know. But the fact that he just staggered him and just came out right off the bat and just started dropping bombs on TJ... I mean, that just shows, and again, the backgrounds in wrestling just shows you what an athlete he is and how quick he learns. When he fought Wilson Hayes and all of a sudden was fighting like a karate fighter, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
He was standing sideways and then he drops like blitz right hands on him. Like, what the fuck? Like, look at how he's fighting. The fact that he can incorporate all these different styles too. He's something special.
Endurance, power, speed.
And success. You know, the first guy ever to be an Olympic gold medalist in wrestling and then a UFC world champion. He beats the best guy ever.
The best guy ever.
You know, I mean, it's amazing. He's an amazing guy.
Mighty Mouse is something else, too, man. That's another guy that you could write books on.
Yep.
Whoa. Yeah. That's another scary fucker.
Yeah, he's a special guy.
Yeah.
I hope he gets fucking paid over there at 1FC. Yeah,
that guy deserves it.
I really do. And they have a deep talent pool over there. They have littler guys in Asia. You know, there's a lot of guys over there for them.
And they got a lot of, I know they bring in a lot of good Muay Thai guys,
mm-hmm.
which I know Mighty Mouse would just scoop them up, put them on their head. But it'd still be fun to see.
Yeah,
because those high level Thai guys are fucking something else.
And I think Mighty Mouse is entertaining the idea of having grappling matches over in 1FC and even maybe possibly kickboxing matches in 1FC.
Oh,
because
shit.
You know they do everything over there.
Yeah.
1FC has a fucking huge audience, man.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking 40, 80 million people are watching each event in Asia.
No way.
And all throughout the world. Yeah, wow, it's giant.
Fucking
and
giant.
They aired over here in America, too. I think it was on the Encore Network. I was flipping through the channels, and it was on. I was like, whoa, okay. Shit. So it's on TV in America, too.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it was after the fact. It wasn't live. I mean, I think you could watch it live on Bleacher Report Live. There was a website, right? You could watch it on Bleacher Report Live the day of the event. And I think it was free. Wasn't it?
Maybe.
Find that out.
Yeah, most.
I think it was.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah.
Anyway, it was free to watch the replay on television. And look, they got fucking high-level athletes. Yeah. That guy, Nastyukin, who knocked out Eddie Alvarez. That guy's legit as fuck. If you could take out Eddie Alvarez like that, you're legit as fuck.
They got some Thai guys, too, that are scary with stand-up.
Yeah.
Man. 225 fucking Thai fights.
Yeah. And how about Yatsen Kalai?
Yeah.
How about they got Yatsen Kalai fighting with MMA gloves on?
Almost illegal, ooh, man.
He's so dangerous.
That's not fair, man.
He's so dangerous. To let him fight Thai style, but with MMA gloves, is like,
I love it, man. I fucking love that. Because now they get to like, they get to work their grips a little better. Then maybe their takedowns are going to come out a little better.
The shell does not work as well.
Yeah, exactly.
The shell, the hands go sneak through little spots, and that's what happened with him and Andy Sauer.
And with our gloves.
Yeah. Oof.
So what happens when these like high level strikers come into high level like MMA, you know, they think they're safe when you're fucking not.
You're
not
safe. Perfect example is Gokhan Saki and Khalil Roundtree. Roundtree just snuck that beautiful straight left right down the pipe. Boom!
And
dropped him. Did you see Roundtree in his last fight?
No.
Holy shit. Against Eric Anders this weekend?
No, I didn't.
Holy shit, dude.
Fucking.
Holy shit.
Massacre.
Pissed a shutout. Was the best he's ever looked. He went to Thailand. Apparently, after he got knocked out by Johnny Walker, he got hit with an elbow in the clinch and decided he really needed to work on his clinch game. So he moved to Thailand. And he was there for the entire camp, put all this shit up on his Instagram, all these videos and training footage. He looked sensational. But when you see him live against Eric Anders, he came out like a Thai guy, light on the front leg, hands up in a class, and just brutalized him. Pitched a fucking shutout, man, against Anders, who's a savage.
Yeah.
And I watched it. I was like, I mean, I knew look, we knew Roundtree was good, but there was just a giant leap between the Roundtree of pre-Thailand and post-Thailand. The most I've ever seen a guy improve in two fights.
Shit.
Amazing. Yeah. Look at the significant strike differential. 63 more Shit. Significant strikes he landed. But it was the way he did it, man. It was the highest significant strike differential. That's crazy. Oh, that's from that event. But that's all good and everything like that, but it was what it looked like. His switch kick to the inside thigh was insane. It was so fast. He's such a big guy, man.
205,
right? Yeah, to be as fast as he was, no telegraphing anything. It was like, bah! Like over and over again, and he was, you know, all Thai style. It was really interesting to watch, man. He just embraced it and came out way better.
It was a surprise when he got Gokhan like that, you know. But I also knew it could happen because it's not kickboxing. And I think Gokhan's a stud kickboxer, man. That guy is fucking good at kickboxing, man.
Oh yeah,
for his weight, the shit that he does, he moves like a 55 pounder, you know.
Yeah,
so I was surprising to see that, you know.
Roundtree has a ridiculously fast straight left. He caught Anders with it a bunch of times too. He dropped him at least three times.
His background's wrestling or.
No, he's a striker.
Striker.
Yeah, his background's striking. Nice. He's a beast, man. I mean, it's just there's some. I mean, it'll be a while before anybody's excited about anybody fighting John Jones, because it's like, what do you got? You know, you got a dude who's just. There's certain guys, like, remember when Anderson was in his prime, and like who are you gonna throw at him? There was nobody there. Till Weidman came along, everybody that they threw at him, you're like, what's Anderson going to do to this dude? When's Anderson going to knock out Yushin Okami? Mm-hmm. When's he going to connect on this guy?
Yeah.
And I think that we're in that situation now with John. You know, we got the Thiago Santos fight that's coming up. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
But it's just, the interesting thing is that Santos is a murderous striker. Is he going to be able to connect? That's what makes it interesting.
I think Jones has some of the best defense.
The best.
Both wrestling, grappling, and striking. Just doesn't get hit.
Yeah. Distance.
Side kick to your fucking kneecap is no longer there. And then when you fucking thinking about that side kick, boom, left elbow to the eye orbital.
Yep.
It's a tough puzzle. He's not light on his feet. He's just right there in front of you, like an unmovable force. You know, he's just gonna stand right there in front of you. He's not gonna go back or nothing. It's just.
And if he catches you catching a break, you're trying to take a breath of air. Whap, 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 whap. Starts pouring it on you. Oh. Starts kicking your legs, front kicking you in the body over and over and over. He sees you slowing down. He's a predator, man.
I wish like they could make a science experiment, make Mighty Mouse 205, make that fight happen, or shrink John Jones and make that fight happen.
Yeah, no shit, right? Yeah. No shit. That would be crazy. That would be crazy. What do you got? Oh. See, the thing is, no 205er can move like Mighty Mouse moves. You would have to see how can Mighty Mouse move at 205.
Yeah.
Because the thing That's about the thing. Him yeah, is there's no gravity.
Yeah.
There's no gravity fucking with him.
Yeah.
When he's 125, he's fucking cutting angles and he's whoop, whoop, where is he? You know, he's on your legs. He can do everything.
But his technique though is also that's crisp. Where I get so when I see him doing the things like he kicks like a fucking Thai dude, shoots a double leg like a fucking good wrestling dude. It's not like just an athletic guy that's explosive. Right. Everything is done just right, you know.
Yeah.
Same thing with John, you know. He's got great technique everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Hume has produced some great fighters, but then there's Mighty Mouse. Like, he's produced some great talent, but then there's Mighty Mouse. He's, like, stands way out. And you got to wonder, like, is it Mighty Mouse? Is it Matt Hume putting more emphasis on him? Is it a combination of things? Because usually when you get a guy that's that good, you get a gym that starts producing multiple champions like that. Usually, right? Yeah. They get, but that area, like that, Pankration's not known for having that kind of talent other than him. There's like him.
Josh Barnett.
Yeah, Josh Barnett came from there. So, yeah. But Josh is trained everywhere now. Josh started his career there, but he's basically been everywhere.
Is Matt Hume open to like the public? Like anybody can just walk in?
I think so. Training? I mean, I think he has regular classes, the whole deal. But I know he gave a lot of specialized attention to Mighty Mouse. Also, he just felt like Mighty Mouse is a real sponge. You know, he really learns well.
Yeah, for a fact. That guy does everything good, man.
What do you think you're going to do when you retire?
I don't know yet.
You don't think about it at all?
I do think about it. The main thing is make sure that before I'm retired, my kids are set for life with their universities, with their houses, all that stuff. That's number one goal. Then when I retire, I don't know. I got a lot of options I could do. You know, I got to see which one I'm going to like the most. Because whatever I'm going to do, obviously nothing I'll love as much as fighting. Nothing will make me wake up at 6 in the morning to go fucking run. Nothing will have that love in me. When you ask about the longevity, it's just because I love it so much. I don't have to work for it. I love it. I love what I do. Even hitting the bag for 35, 40 minutes, sometimes it's so fucking boring and monotonous. But if I got the right music going on, got me a little bit of water, let's do it. You know, I'm going to have fun doing it, you know. So I got to just find something that my heart is solely in and I'm having fun. I still haven't figured out what that is, you know. Maybe skiing, you know. Every time skiing? I go skiing, the skiers are trying to recruit me. They're like, yo, who is this guy, man? We need this guy over here on our skiing? Team to win. Maybe skiing, man. That shit gets my blood pumping, you know.
Really? You like skiing?
I fucking love it, man.
I hate it.
I love that shit.
I always worry about falling.
So that's your problem.
That is my problem. It's
fucking snow, man. That's going to happen.
Yeah.
You've been everybody kicked in the head. You've been grappling forever.
Had their fucking ACL torn apart. I've already had two knee reconstructions.
So when I go down the hill,
I'm like, don't get hurt, don't get hurt, don't get hurt.
That's so crazy how brains think, because I'm thinking there's no way I can get hurt when I'm on those things. I'm just fucking going as fast as I can.
Oh, you're one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm like, there's no way I can get hurt. It's fucking snow.
But you could definitely get hurt.
Yeah, definitely. I've had fucking... while I was standing still, like, past my friends, hey, I slow down to say what's up. And just, like, some 70-year-old man didn't see that I'm stopped, not moving here, and just fucking
hit me
into the kneecaps. Good thing they're somewhat flexible, nothing tore, nothing. But it was, like, a good hit, though, you know, like a good little low kick out of nowhere, you know?
So, I worry about that with my kids, some clodhopper.
Oh, but if they start young, though... Forget about it.
Oh yeah, no, they're good. They're already doing black diamonds, these little fuckers.
Yeah,
yeah. But they're so low to the ground. They're tiny. You know, the little skis and shit. They
no
can move
fear
better.
At that age.
No
either.
Fear.
Once they already fell in like once or twice, like, oh, Dad, it's just snow.
I watched some of those fucking men going down those hills, though.
Oh,
just shh.
When they drop them off in the helicopter.
Oh my God. Oh, that's ridiculous. I watched a video the other night of a guy went down this mountain that no one's ever skied down before. They dropped him off at the top, and he had to climb the first couple of feet down with the skis on before he got to this open chute. I was like, "What in the fuck are you doing?" He's climbing. Like, you can't just ski. There's rocks everywhere and shit.
That's crazy.
Fuck you.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, go get a better hobby. It's ridiculous. Sliding down a mountain.
I might end up in there one day.
You think
not in no time soon, because those guys are a lifetime of skill. But I wouldn't take it off. You know, like I'd love to ski one of those crazy mountains that are just fucking super duper steep and just rip it. You know,
one thing about skiing is you could do it when you're old.
Yeah,
because this lady who was teaching my daughter, she was giving my daughter lessons at the ski place. She was like deep into her 60s. She was skiing great.
Yeah. Well, they
like,
got technique, you know. They probably grew up in the snow. I started skiing when I was like 30, you know, so I got a lot of catching up to do.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I just know too many. Like Ari, my friend Ari, he broke his wrist last year, and he broke his ankle 2 years ago. He's always fucking himself up.
Is that guy balls to the wall?
I don't know. He probably is on mushrooms.
That's a good time to ski, man.
That's what I hear.
That's the best time to ski.
That's what I know a couple people that have done it on mushrooms. They say you ski really. Yeah, you like it?
Oof.
What's the best thing about skiing on mushrooms?
Well, it could go both ways because it fucks up your depth perception. You know?
When right. You don't know where the trees are.
So the first time I did it, I was like super grandma, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, everybody's like, what's wrong with you? I'm like, no, just leave me the fuck alone. Because the snow is all the same too, right? So now it just fucks with your depth perception so bad.
You don't see the divots in the snow.
Yeah, it fucks with you a lot.
Because everything gets pixelated,
right?
Oh, you're really tripping hard then.
Oh, man. And everything is like the same, and I can't really see the bumps. And then I don't see the bumps. I just feel them, and whoa. All right, I'm going to need to tough this one out. Let's do it, you know? And then the next time I did it, I did a little less of a dosage, had a blast, you know?
Yeah, they say it's a micro dose thing.
Yeah.
You should just, like, don't take, like, 3 grams. Take, like, a half a gram.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well, the first time I was doing the bro science, and it was like, oh, yeah, I think it's, like, 4 grams is cool, man. Let's go.
Yikes!
On a slight fast, you know?
Yeah, the problem with it, the vision thing, when you do the mushrooms and things get pixelated, where you see like almost like a matrix around you of all the I would imagine that would fuck you up skiing. You wouldn't be able to see all the creases in the snow and shit.
And then you just feel it all of a sudden. You're like, what the fuck happened?
Do you ever snowboard?
I did it for like half a day. That was pretty cool. But I used to ski like inline, like in parks, you know, like on ramps, on half pipes, rollerblade.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I could like jump on rails and half pipes. And I could even do like a front flip on my skates, but this was when I was like 13,
Jesus
14
Christ.
Years old. Yeah, yeah. So skiing came very easy to me. And snowboarding, not so much because I didn't skateboard when I was a kid.
Mm, I skateboarded as a kid, but I've never snowboarded. But the people that do it, they say it's easier to get better at snowboarding than it is to get better at skiing. They say it's like it's hard in the beginning, but once you get it, it's easier to get better at.
Oh, okay.
But when you fall, a lot of dudes fall. The snowboard goes up in the air. Your feet are stuck on it. You land right on your fucking head. Yeah. A lot of people get knocked the fuck out because you can't move your legs individually like you can if you're skiing.
And you land on the tailbone a lot, too, a lot of people tell me.
Yeah. And if you're skiing and you land funky, the skis snap loose and you can move your legs around.
No, snowboard, you're strapped in there.
Yeah, you're strapped in.
Nah, snowboard is this shit, too. People go through the trees like fucking Silver Surfer. That's fun, man.
Yeah, but...
That's a rush.
The slowing down part with those seems different. Like, less options to slow down.
Oh, I love all that shit. Anything that gets my heart pumping, man.
Do you skydive or anything crazy like that?
I haven't done the skydiving because I'm afraid of the... I've heard bad stories about the landing. How you are with the skiing, you got a couple buddies that gotten hurt. I got a couple buddies that gotten hurt on the landing of skydiving. I'm
really?
I can't do that. I'm fighting still. Yeah. As soon as I'm done fighting, whoo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you had any knee problems?
Yeah. Numerous knee problems. I've torn the meniscus a couple times on both knees.
Yeah.
From wrestling practice. All from wrestling practice.
I'm
usually.
Sure.
Yeah.
Did you get them scoped or what'd you do about it?
Just rehab. I got a big fear of going to sleep by...
Anesthesia?
Yeah.
Really?
I got a supreme fear of that. I don't want that in my life right now. I'm not ready for that.
That's a sucky way to die. Go to sleep to get your knee fixed.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap. See you in heaven.
Yeah.
Tweet, tweet. Yeah.
Sex. Not yet.
So you've just basically, whatever meniscus tears you've had, you just dealt with it.
Just rehab. And then I also heard from doctors, you don't really need a meniscus. It's just going to fucking hurt like fuck. So
you don't really need it. Meniscus?
That's what they told me. Like a lot of times, instead of scoping it, they cut it. You know, like I know a lot of athletes, they just cut it, you know?
They cut pieces of it, yeah.
Yeah.
They, especially depending on like if it's a bucket handle tear or how bad the tear is. Yeah.
Like Mike Brown has, I know his meniscus cut, and he was the one that was telling me last time I fucked up my meniscus. He's like, "Do not get it scoped because then you're gonna re-injure and you're gonna be again through the whole thing. Get it snipped out, get it cut, you know."
And so that's what he did. He just got it cut out.
Yeah,
all of it.
Yeah, Joel Romero, same thing. I don't think Joel Romero has a meniscus.
True.
Yeah, because I've had numerous problems with my meniscus, and I was about to go in and get the surgery, and I was asking everybody that's had the same problem and. I was like, fuck it, bro. I'm just going to rehab it out and just do rehab. And I did rehab for like 4 or 5 months and it got better.
Oh, wow. Four or five months, huh?
Well, that was last year in 2018. That's what I did a larger part of the year, just heal up injuries that I had, you know, just get better and better and better.
So when you say like rehab, what kind of rehab are you doing for your meniscus? What were you doing?
Like where you go to the place and the guy tells you like he'll hold a towel and
do like things like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay, different.
Get on the foam mats.
Physical therapy.
And, yeah, physical therapy, you know.
Right.
That's what I did.
What's your diet like?
Man, I got many of diets.
Many of diets? Like when you're in training. When you're training, not when you knock out Darren Till. I'm sure you ate like a wild animal.
Yeah, for a fact. I got many of diets at all times, though. I just kind of, at 55, I used to have to diet so hard. 8 to 10 weeks I would have to diet to bring my body to like 173, 174, especially the last 3-4 years of my career, mixed with a lot of running. You know, at 70, I don't have to do that. So I'm still kind of strict. I just stop eating after like a certain time, like 7 p.m. I stop eating. You know, I wake up. 9
When's
p.m.
your last training session?
Depends. It could be sometimes I'll finish at around 10, 10:30 at night, and I'll just drink.
At
like,
night?
Yeah.
So you don't need anything after you train?
No, I just drink a shit ton of water, you know.
Really?
This is when I'm like, I'm training, and I'm used to it, you know, because I used to do it at 55, so
right.
I couldn't gain weight. So I just, let's say I went for a run at like 10 o'clock at night, finish at 12, I just get back, drink a shit ton of water, wake up, and then have my meal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need, when I'm in training camp, one thing that I notice, I don't like to have a big breakfast before I go train. It fucks me up.
Really?
Slows me down. The body's processing all that shit. I just don't feel as accurate. I could just wake up and go to the gym and do fine. If I wake up, eat, chill, all that stuff, then go to the gym, it's not the same. You know,
yeah,
lazy.
The energy.
Like, yeah.
The energy. It takes your body to digest it. That's legit. Yeah, I always feel the same way. I think you're better off just eating a little bit of fruit.
Yeah.
A little bit of fruit, some
pineapple,
coffee.
Anything with sugar, some light, coffee, and go.
Just light. Yeah.
I don't want my system actually having to dissolve things as I'm already training.
That's why I'm surprised that you're running late at night and then you're not eating something and then you're going through the entire night with no food and then a light breakfast.
And I'll burn right through it. Like I'm burning through fat in my sleep.
Do you have a nutritionist that you consult or
I had numerous ones at 155. I had numerous ones and I took what each one gave me that was like, wow, this actually helped me for this or for this, and I've jot those down on my book and I use those things still to this day. There's some things that I use, then mixing with the stuff that I know works for me. You know, like I know for a fact somebody, numerous nutritionists, would tell me, no, but that's wrong, you should just wake up at 6 a.m, get a meal, and then at 8 a.m, get another meal, and then by 10 o'clock you're good to go. Nah, buddy, I'm just gonna go to the gym and I'm gonna fucking feel amazing. I don't need all those extra fucking meals. And then after that I pick out, and when I eat, man, I like it's almost a religious experience for me. I like to be very happy. So if we go to a place to eat, and I've never been there, and you're telling me this is the place right here, this is where you want to eat at, I'm getting everything on the fucking menu. It looks, I'll fill this fucking table up, and I'm going to try everything, and I'm going to know what's good at this place. I don't like to put restrictions when I eat, but I don't eat like that all day long, you know. So my one or two meals that I eat, they're powerful, you know.
So you, real light, but when you eat a big meal, you just go hog.
Yeah.
And then nothing after 7 p.m. at night.
Yeah, nothing after 7 p.m.
Yeah, that's like basically like intermittent fasting, really.
You're mimicking that. And then I saw that, the intermittent fasting, and started breaking down like the details of it, you know? Because where I got it from is that when I was at 55, let's say I'd finished my workout at American Top Team, I finished at 178 pounds. Fuck, 3 weeks ago. Okay, I get back home. I eat a little something because I just finished doing a two-hour workout. And I put my sweats on and go run. Like, I'd run 10, 11 o'clock at night. And I'd run for like an hour. I'd get back. I'd touch down like to 172 maybe, 174. But I couldn't eat. I just drink water. So I got used to that regimen of not eating after my workouts, you know, and feeling fine the next day. Just a shit ton of water.
Your body just got used to it.
Yeah, maybe electrolytes or whatever. And then when those, the intermittent fasting diet or the fasting came up and they put the science behind it, I'm like, oh, no wonder it makes sense to me, you know? It's not that I'm a special mutant. There's a science behind this, you know?
Yeah, it's actually healthy for you. Your body needs breaks.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you're doing strength and conditioning and things along those lines, how often are you doing that a week?
It depends what stage I'm at in the fight. If I'm like 3 weeks out, obviously, or like 12 weeks out, like right now I'll lift weights, running, swimming, anything to just get my heart going. And I do a lot of kettlebells. I like that. It's like a full body workout, and it's kind of like almost wrestling, you know, when you're getting in there in the reps and it's heavy, if your technique's off, you just fucked up that rep. You wasted too much energy. You're not going to get to those projections you wanted to get. And I got lucky down at the gym that I trained, one of the kettlebell champions, he's a world champion, he's at the gym, so he's showing me like a lot of technique and a lot of the grit behind it, and it's amazing. I mean, this guy does incredible things, you know? So it's huge for me, the kettlebells. I like them, you know? A lot of strength and conditioning too with my coach, Jesus Guy. We've been together for like 12 years, you know?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of kettlebells as well. It's my favorite exercise tool. If I pick one thing, that I would say give me a chin-up bar and kettlebells, and I'm good. Yeah.
A grip, back, and then the sheer coordination of it, you know, the pop them up in the air.
Making the whole body work as one whole unit, yeah.
And when you're tired and you can't fucking not concentrate, because every one of those techniques, every one of those lifts has a severe technique behind it. And if you fuck up, man, you fuck up your back, your shoulder, you just throw your whole shit off, you know?
Now, what do you alter when you get closer to a fight? Like, what do you eliminate? Do you eliminate the weightlifting? Do you...
The length of the training session, you know, as in when we're more out from the fight, we'll train for longer periods, 2-3 hours. You know, 3 hours always the max, and maybe I'll do that twice in a day. You know, when I'm closer to the fight, maybe an hour and a half, tops 2 hours, and maybe two of those in a day, you know, and then that's it, you know. I'm also 34, so I don't like, not when I was like 26 that I could fucking train 10 hours in one day and wake up the next day like nothing happened, you know. So now I also listen to my body. Like, man, the last session beat me up. I'm going to do a 1 hour session now, you know.
Do you take your heart rate? Do you use heart rate variability monitors or anything like that?
Nah, I don't even know.
No, nothing that?
I don't even know what you just said right now.
Old school. Yeah, right. Yeah, it's, you know, people are doing that to see what their heart rate is when they wake up. See if like if your heart rate's inconsistent. Say if you have a resting heart rate of 40 beats per minute, then you wake up one day it's 47, 48. That might indicate that you're overtrained. 52, 53 would be a real good indication. And you would probably want to either do active recovery that day or just take the day off. Maybe even go for a light hike or something like that.
And maybe I should invest in some of this science stuff.
There's a lot of thought behind that because sometimes people are getting sick and they don't realize it. They're just too tough and they just push through it. I feel flat today. But what's really going on is your body's fighting something off.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. How much sleep are you making sure you get a night?
For the larger part of my career... Because I have sleeping problems, like really bad. I would sleep like 4 or 5 hours and be fucking perfect, man.
Yeah?
Be perfect. Never have a problem. You know, as I started getting older, I've been trying to force myself to sleep. That's one big thing with my coaches and my management because they know how I sleep. And like on fight week, I'd be up in the lobby 3 in the morning and then go to sleep, wake up at 8 in the morning. And we got to change this, you know. So I've been trying to change that a lot. And I just try to put myself in bed early and then... I just stay in there, you know, I don't do nothing. The phone's already off. There's no TV in my room. I'm just chilling there. But this isn't fight camp. This is not like year round, you know?
Right.
And I'm just trying to go to sleep, you know, however long that takes.
Does American Top Team have a float tank?
No, not yet, but
they're working on it, aren't
Dan,
they?
Dan, did you just hear Joe Rogan?
Hey,
we need the fucking float, bro. Get the float, man.
Why did I think they did? Were they thinking about it at one point in time? Is that what was going on?
They sure are now. Dan, get the fucking float.
Dan.
Joe needs the float.
You know we love you, Dan. Get that fucking tank in there, baby. I'll hook you up. I'll get you to the right people.
Float Lab. Hook up from Joe now.
Float Lab in Venice. Shout out to the Float Lab. Yeah, the guy who put my tank in here.
Nice.
They're the best tanks, man. I'll show it to you afterwards. They're so ridiculously over-engineered. But when you get in them, man, you relax. Like, it changes your world.
Those things are fucking awesome. I've done it like 2 or 3 times. You're fucking mind-blowing.
Is there a good spot near you?
No, not near me. Maybe like...
on the road?
Yeah, on the road. Yeah. Like 2 hours up north.
That sucks. Yeah, Dan should open up a spot down there. I mean, it'd be great for fighters. As long as you keep them from jacking off in there. That's a problem. You get a little too relaxed.
Certain guys that are already flagged like, nah, so-and-so can't come in these waters, man.
You gotta
evacuate, my brother.
You gotta have a passport for these waters, sir. Yeah, there's certain dudes that are just freaks. You got to be careful with them.
Athletic freaks and fucking...
freaks. Double freaks. Yeah. Well, you guys have how many people at your gym? You probably have one of the freakiest gyms ever in terms of talent, overall talent.
Oh,
how many fighters are there?
I don't know, man. Sometimes I get to the pro classes and there's like 50 pro fighters on
that
the mat, you know?
Crazy.
40 pro fighters on the mat because the main mat and the other main mat are covered and the cage is covered and the square cage where I'm always training at, which fits like another 10 people, is completely covered with pro athletes, you know? And that day we have the 11 o'clock to like 12:45 session and then on different session for like either the lighter or the bigger guys will come in at a different session, you know. And then we got guys throughout the day doing their individual training, so it's just crazy.
How much of your time is spent doing group classes versus how much of it is time is individual specialized stuff, like say working on something, a combination to land on till, or you know what you're planning for Askren?
Group classes will be more like well, I won't really learn. It's not that I can't learn too much, but I'm not like my Mike Brown, for example, which is the guy that runs my camp at American Top Team.
Yeah, great guy.
Not only is he a great guy, but his brain he's the like Elon Musk of like fighting and shit, man. His ideas are fucking dope, solid, and like way ahead of their time always. You know, a lot of stuff that we're seeing now, Mike Brown's been preaching to us for like a while, so he knows me pretty well. He knows. Man, Masvidal can only do about 2 moves a day. So if he's going to show me something, he showed me 1 to 2 moves tops. And I'm a driller. I'll just drill those moves as many times as it takes me for me to get them. And that's like my group setting. You know, that's like, okay, go just drill this. And he knows that I need at least an hour of drilling with a brand new move for me to get it, you know. And then after that, just go live with whoever's in the class, you know, whoever they brought for me.
Now, when you say you drill a lot, like, are you drilling a lot striking drills, MMA drills, wrestling drills, basically everything? You
everything.
Just constantly
I'm a
driller.
Yeah. I drill a ton, and I go live a ton. But I like to complement it with a lot of drilling. I just feel that I'm always at my best game when I drill. Now, sometimes I take away from drilling completely because I feel drilled out. Like, man, I've been drilling so much. Just want to go live now. You know, but usually every day that I'm in a gym, I'm drilling a particular technique, you know?
I think that's so important.
Oh, super important.
For every martial art, jiu-jitsu, anything.
Martial arts, drilling. Sport, you know, you're drilling your free throws or, mm-hmm. or whatever it is. You have to just drill it so your body knows how to do it without thinking about it.
Yeah, that's why when you see guys that just spar too much and all they want to do is spar, like, man, you know, Kira, you're decreasing your chances of successing at the thing you're enjoying
yeah.
because you're just not spending enough time focusing yeah. on the fundamentals and techniques.
Got to sharpen the tools.
Yeah, and keep those tools, you know, like, keep moving them around, like, keep adding to them.
Of course. Yeah. Driving guys fucking nuts. When you just drill and eventually you hit that 1,000 mark,
mm-hmm.
it's not the same when you were doing it 5 or 6 times, you know. I'm no. giving out too much wisdom now. These people are going to know what's up, but...
It's That's really is true it's though. Drilling. It's boring, so it's people boring. Don't enjoy it as much. It's not Actually, nearly like as it, exciting.
Man. I'm the only sociopath, and then you could ask Mike Brown. I enjoy drilling, you know, at a good pace, good speed, where we're just going, and it's yeah. almost like a live where I'm just drilling that move, but I'm giving all my energy into it. I love it, man.
Well, you're also aware that that's going to bring you success.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. of course. Yeah. But I just love it, you know, the sheer making sure that my penetration step is right or my left hand was up mm-hmm. when I threw my right hand and my coach goes, hey, good job, do it again. Okay, bam, that I fucking love it, man.
Now, when you have a fight coming up, like say with Askren, are you watching footage on him?
Nah, I don't watch footage. My Mike Brown, Paulino Hernandez, Gallo, they'll watch footage and tell me what to do and what not to do, you know, like for the till fight, same thing, you know. Or maybe they'll send me like a clip that they wanted to see me, like when Woodley fought Till, they're like, look how Woodley countered him with this or look what Till did there. There's so many like little clips and I'll watch them, but to watch fights, no, I don't really watch like my opponent's fight.
Now what about recovery? Do you guys do you get a lot of massage? Do you do ice baths? Do you any shit like that?
I do I've always done ice baths here and there throughout my career, but thanks to my good friend Michael Miller, I try to do them a lot more, which I still need to do them more, you know, a good 2-3 times a week is when I feel like at my best. Sauna, I use it for recovery, you know, especially after like a lot of the guests that you've had in your show. I've always done the sauna to cut weight
mm-hmm.
and knew that it had great benefits in training in the sauna, but I didn't know the science behind it. Then you have like Dr. Ron Patrick come in and it's like mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Wow, this all makes sense. Why the sauna is so amazing, why I feel great after I use a sauna. Maybe not immediately, because after a 2-hour wrestling practice or striking practice, and then you go in the sauna because you're like heavy, they want you to work out in there, you feel like shit afterwards.
Yeah.
But surprisingly, the next day I don't feel that bad, or the day after that. And I just thought nothing of it, you know, just fucking whatever, man. It's just, I feel good today. I had a great breakfast, I guess. But I started thinking about times that I was implementing the sauna a lot in my training regimen to times I wasn't, and I was like, wow, the sauna thing's amazing for everything, you know?
Yeah, no, it's huge. It's giant for reduction of inflammation. And there was amazing. That study that they did in, was it Norway or Sweden or somewhere, where they said there's a 40% decrease in mortality amongst all causes, stroke, heart attack, cancer, everything, for people that, yeah, 40% decrease in mortality for people that use the sauna. I think it was 4 times a week for 20 minutes at a time at 180 degrees. I think that was the study that they ran. And they just showed that
180 degrees.
Yeah. So they, which is, you know, normal temperature, anywhere between 170 and 190 is where a lot of people have their sauna set. But they said that in that hot range for 20 minutes, your body produces so many heat shock proteins mm-hmm. that it just, yeah. It helps with so many different health problems.
Yeah. When I heard Miss Patrick say mm-hmm. all those things, my fucking mind blew up. You know?
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
It's like, I'll never have to take pharmaceutical drugs. Nobody's ever going to tell me you need these pills to survive.
Right, right.
And then people that hear this, do they doubt it? You know, they have one pro fighter telling you, Joe Rogan telling you, and they had a doctor telling you, you want to cure problems, just go in the sauna. You
yeah,
know?
Man, people with arthritis. And, you know, another thing that's great is cryotherapy. Cryotherapy is great for people with inflammation issues too. Anything where you can get your body freaking out about temperature. Your body freaks out about temperature, whether it's cold or hot, and your body produces cold shock or heat shock proteins, and then that really helps your body reduce inflammation.
That's fucking insane.
You just feel better too, right? You get out of there, you're like, I just feel better.
Yeah. Even yeah. when I'd be sucked out, like, man, I feel like fucking shit. I just lost fucking 4 or 5 pounds of water after a practice in the sauna. You feel like shit. But then I take a bath and then go to sleep, wake up the next day feeling good, you know? I put the water back in the system, obviously, but I would just feel good. And I didn't quite know why this is happening, you know? like, let's say I got kicked in my elbow would blow up, and then for some reason that day, I had fucking 45 minutes of in the sauna because that's what my coaches thought I needed. The swelling would dramatically go down, but I wouldn't attribute it to that. I'd just be like, oh, shit, that's crazy, bro. I'm fucking Wolverine, you know?
Well, I'm sure being Wolverine had something to do with it, but the sauna had something to do with it, too. Now, you're one of the top contenders in the division now, and as things kind of heat up, are you having to do more media obligations before your big fights now?
No.
No?
I just fucking say no, man.
Do you?
Ah, man, I don't like...
What if you get a fight for the title? They're probably going to make you do all that shit, won't they?
You want this circus show? This is how it comes, buddy. You know, because I can't do all that shit. I'm going to fucking fly to L.A., fly to New York, fly here.
Rex you, right?
I want to pay you. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm a fucking soldier for the money. You're going to pay me for these fucking numerous TV outlet stores you got me going to and selling products? I'll do it, man. You know, and I don't want to sound like I'm not a company man, but I like to get paid for my services. If I got to be talking to numerous people, that's not what I signed up for. I signed up to punch people in the face.
Right.
Let's get that right. You know, if I got to be giving speeches out, giving out my secrets of wisdom, pay me some money for that. Cool. I'll do whatever you want then.
Yeah. Easy. Well, it definitely takes away from you, too.
So much time,
so much energy you have in this life.
No, definitely takes away.
Yeah.
Definitely takes away. And I feel also like the guys that are constantly putting stuff out there, right? Shit, man. People get bored. You fucking just putting shit out there, you know? And certain people are putting certain things out there, they gravitate to those things. This guy's not on a lot of talk shows or whatever. I want to hear what he had to say on this particular one. If you're constantly like, this guy's an asshole, and this guy's an asshole, everybody
it's
already
the same
knows.
Shit already,
the notification comes in, they already fucking put you on mute, you know?
Right.
And you did that to yourself.
Yeah.
You got nobody to blame but yourself, you little Instagram whore. And I'm not talking about to the ladies. I would never talk to a lady like that. I'm talking about to the dudes that are fucking straight sluts.
Yeah.
To my ladies, I love you long time. Me loving you always.
When you have been in the game as long as you have and have been as successful as you have information that is very valuable to young fighters. They can learn shit from you without having to experience a lot of the negative things that you've experienced, without having some of the mistakes that you've made, you know, some of the things you learned that were positive. You could teach people. But oftentimes, as fighters get older and then retire, all that knowledge just goes away. It just gets lost because the fighters either don't become a coach or don't ever write it down or don't do interviews. I think a guy like you in particular, because you're a very crafty fighter, you have a lot of valuable information for young people, for young guys coming up.
Oh, I do. I know it. You know, and you know how I got that information? Putting myself in uncomfortable spots. You know, I went to the University of Wyoming, which I loved that experience. It's higher than Colorado, and I'm with a D1 national program ran by Mark Branch. David Branch, I'm sorry. And Chris Pendleton, these guys are fucking studs, and they let me come in there. I'm just some MMA fucking fighter, man. You know, and they let me come in there, stay with them for about a month, and just wrestle and be a part of the program. So I learned what worked at the high level or not. Because I might think, when you get a single leg, I could backflip out of it. I might think. When I go over here to this university, I'm going to find out if it works or not. I did the same thing. I went to the University of Oregon, got to wrestle over there. I've done a lot of high-level boxing camps with good boxers, just being around them, amateur world champions, gold medalists. You know, in Miami, we're a hub for the Cuban crime wave of great boxers. You know, we get all these guys that are Olympians that come in there, and I'd be at the gym with them, picking their brain, getting beat up by them, learning since I was young. So I for the boxing fundamentals, I got very, very lucky. I didn't even know what I had to me at that axis, because I'd be working out with gold medalists, world champions. It was insane, you know. So I think one thing I would tell any young fighter, if you want to learn something, submerge in it. You know, if I want to learn jiu-jitsu, I'm not going to go to Rex Kwon Do. I'm going to fucking go find the dopest jiu-jitsu guy and get humbled. You know, a lot of people don't like to get humbled. I don't want to go with that guy. He's really good at wrestling. No, man. Shut the fuck up. Put the ego aside and go get humbled. Learn. Because the more time you put into that craft, eventually whatever's bad will get good if you put the time into it, you know? And a lot of people don't like to do that. And I think even more nowadays that I see on the mat now, with the egos and the social media and like people filming and shit, there's a lot of pro fighters that I see sitting out that don't want to do the wrestling class because a couple wrestling studs just walked in through the door. So there's like two types of guys. And when I see these All-American and national champions, I'm like, whoa, today's going to be a good practice. These guys are my weight. I better be on my A game, man. I'm going to put some good music on. This shit's going to get crazy. Or there's the guys that when they walk in, they're like, nah, I don't need it. You know, anyways, I'm not fighting a wrestler. I don't need it. Me, I'm always hyped for the challenge, you know, to push myself to the fucking sheer limit and see what comes out of that, you know.
So you think a lot of it is just a mentality to embrace struggle and embrace difficult moments and embrace the opportunity to learn and grow.
Yes, and unfortunately in this sport you don't have to get a concussion, because in boxing you don't take me wrong, you don't have to spar hard to be a good striker, you don't. But there's certain things like wrestling, you got to wrestle hard, you got to drill hard. Jiu-jitsu, same thing, you got to drill hard. You got to get, you're going with Marcelo Garcia, you're going to get fucking tapped a bunch of times. Guess what, buddy? Who cares, bro?
Right.
Learn that humbling experience. Mm-hmm. Enjoy that. You know, if you get a chance to roll with a guy like that, take full advantage of it. And nowadays, it seems like sometimes people don't want to do that. You know, like I'm in the Mixalot, I'm in one of the biggest gyms. And I see sometimes guys don't want to take those challenges in, you know, like a top-notch MMA fighter go straight wrestling with some college wrestler, some high school kid that's just a stud at wrestling. You know, do that. Put yourself in that uncomfortable position. See what happens, bro. You know?
Do you think you'll ever be a coach?
I could be. You know, I got a couple amateurs that I got. I got my boy Charlie Decker. He's also like a friend and an amateur. And he's doing good things in amateur. And now he's going to go pro. He's going to tear it up, man. One day, hopefully, he'll be in your show, man, getting interviewed. Guy's got a lot of talent. But I don't know. I don't know if I'll be a coach. It's a full-time job.
It's a full-time job. And you got to be committed to somebody, right? And if they don't have the same mentality that you had, you're going to get frustrated.
And sometimes fighters don't like to pay, man. What are you going to do now? You got to collect from a fighter? She's going to get crazy, man.
A lot of them don't like to pay.
A lot of them don't like to pay. And you know something about me, Joe? I like money, man. If I work, I better get paid, man. Because if I don't get paid, it's going to be a fucking problem, man. It's going to be a fucking problem. But there's a lot of fighters that do pay and that are fucking amazing and that are the most straight-edge dudes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, certainly a guy like you, if you ever did decide to be a coach, you would have a lot of choices.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is that at the very least, you should write some of this shit down. Is it?
Yeah, we got the Street Survival Series coming out. Volume 1, 2, and 3 is going to drop very soon. Books, DVDs,
really?
Everything. Everything's coming out.
That's good to hear, man.
I don't know when it's coming out, but it's coming out soon, though, man.
You should write a book about your experience in music. Just going from the backyard fights that people could see on the internet with Kimbo to where you are today, it's pretty fucking incredible.
Oh, it's amazing.
What an incredible rise to the top.
Yeah, and you know what's something I can tell all the young fighters? Before anybody saw this, before anybody saw me on YouTube or anything, I side up here. I invested in myself. I believed in myself. That's why I put myself in these tough situations to go with the best wrestler in the workout room, the best striker from the world, and just constantly get there because I knew the difference between me and them was only time. I just had to put in the time.
Where'd you develop this mentality? Where'd you get it?
Where'd I get it? Maybe God opened up my mind and just gave me the message of just growing up very humble and just fucking wanting certain things that I didn't have and just like, I'm gonna get this.
But understanding that really just takes work. Understanding it.
Yeah, really just takes work.
Yeah, you know? It really takes work and it really takes the right mindset. Yeah. Not just the work itself, but the way you're embracing difficult challenges. Instead of shying away from them to protect your ego, you're doing the opposite.
Got to.
Oh, it's the only way.
It's the only way. I'm in combat sports.
In combat sports, nah, yeah.
Tennis, the maybe way. There's another way. I'm not coaching tennis.
So right. But as long in combat sports as you're not being set up, but someone's going to fucking murder you when you're first starting out.
Exactly.
With striking.
That's not what you want. You don't want to get, you know, yeah, I've got 10 pro fights, your first day here, and I break your nose. That doesn't do anything, you know.
Right.
But it's just embracing those challenges, whether it be running a mile in 6 minutes or drilling for 2 hours long, just two techniques, because you're kind of dumb and you fucking got to just do it over and over and over and over. Embrace it, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad you're going to put some of this information out. And I think this is something that, as I was saying, like a guy like you that's been in the game for a long, long time and you've learned a lot about what it takes to become a world-class fighter, That information a lot of times just goes away when that fighter retires. I mean, so many fighters have retired, and you don't really know too much about the process or what they learned.
Well, we got a documentary that's been filming for about 3 years, but we've had trouble when the UFC sold it to like ESPN, getting all the rights and things that go associated with dropping a documentary like that. And in that documentary, I told him from the start when we were going to do it, if we're going to do it, I want it done right, and meaning I want a lot of control over it. And I want a lot of training, you know. I want a lot of the things that I do in training to get me in shape. Some people find it cool, some people won't. So in that documentary, there's a lot of just how I straight up train, you know, like a lot of the Cuban mythology that goes behind it from my coaches that are Cuban, what we like to do to prepare for the fight, how we break it down.
Do you do different shit than people normally see?
In the preparation? Yeah, actually, you know Joel well, you know.
Sure.
And stuff. Joel, my coach, which used to train Joel as well, and a lot of the Cuban community, they have a big, especially if they grew up in Cuba, they have that big conspiracy theory like nobody else. Whenever I'm hitting pads or anything like that, I'm about to fight somebody, you will never see me do a technique on the pads that I will do in the fight. I shouldn't even say this because my coach is going to slap me in the face. You will never see me do anything that might resemble anything I do in the fight. And he lives by that. You know, he's another guy that just shies away from cameras, hates cameras. He's always in my corner. He's got a yellow bandana or something yellow. You know, he's been in my corner, Joel's corner, numerous guys' corner. And they're very, like, secretive of the training, you know. They think that everybody's watching.
They are.
You know, they think America might invade Cuba still. So
they might.
Who knows, right? So the training footage, they don't want that leaking out, you know. And I've most of my career have been like that, you know. But for the documentary, we open up on a lot of things that we do for training, for like from reflexes to ways to recover, how we spar, how I set up the sparring, things like that, you know.
But what kind of shit do you do that's unusual?
Not unusual, I guess I would say, but I don't know. We could do like 2 hours of boxing, right? Just straight boxing. And we would just break down fundamentals. I would just do 2 hours, just straight basics, which is fucking boring. But it's just like endurance mixed with the technique, you know. We do also a lot of right from here, from this chair. We'll punch from here, hit the pads from here. From the chair.
Yeah.
Just our core and arms. With the pads, with the gloves. Just go 5 minute rounds.
Without using your legs.
Without using the legs. You try it out and you tell me how that feels, you know, it's fucking great, you know. Like right now for that, I'm gonna get kicked in the fucking leg pretty hard, you know. when I tell you this man is secretive.
How's he gonna feel about the documentary?
He doesn't know how much he's getting into the documentary. Because he's very like, this is for us, you know. Mm-hmm. Why would you release this while you're still fighting? Right. Release this when you're done fighting type guy, you know. And
why do you want to release it while you're still fighting?
I mean, fucking, you can't stop the sun from rising. You're not going to stop me if you know my techniques, you know? It's not going to change anything. It's what's coming is coming, you know?
That's a beautiful way to look at it. Well, listen, brother, I'm glad we got together and did this, man.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate you as a fighter. Yeah. You're an interesting cat, and I wish you nothing but the best, and I'm very excited to see that fight.
That's right, my bad.
Try to reach. All right. Gamebred. What is it? Gamebred MMA? What is your...
Gamebred Fighter.
Gamebred Fighter.
And if you want one of these little three-piece and a soda shirts...
Oh, is that a three-piece and a soda shirt? You made a fucking shirt after it.
Made the shirt
that's
after
it. Hilarious.
I gotta get paid because fighting does all right, but it doesn't really pay us how we should, you know? So
I hear you. Where does someone get that shirt? Three-piece and a soda.
Wait up.
Hold on, we'll figure this out.
I actually know where to get these.
So it's Gamebred Fighter on Instagram, Gamebred Fighter on Twitter, same thing, right?
Yes, sir. And GamebredOfficial.com.
GamebredOfficial.com.
But at the end of this week, the website's fully running and stuff. You get all the shirts you want.
Get yourself a three-piece and a soda, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, brother. That was awesome.
Yes, sir.
Woo!